danger were sent off to the world court. Their plans for global domination were preemptively cut short. Their weapons of mass destruction.
This is the Quality News Network. At the White House today, President Bush and British Prime Minister Tony Blair met to discuss the Mideast crisis, which is in its 17th day. They held a joint press conference to announce their support for a UN ceasefire resolution next week to end the fighting between the Israeli military and Hezbollah guerrillas. The U.S. and Britain are united in rejecting calls for an immediate ceasefire, which is favored by most European and Arab countries. They also support a multinational force to provide humanitarian aid, which they say is a priority. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice will go back to the region tomorrow for a second round of shuttle diplomacy. She is currently in Malaysia attending a regional security conference. In southern Lebanon, Israeli air and artillery attacks continue to strike at Hezbollah sites. Up to 12 people were reportedly killed. Today, Hezbollah said it fired a new long-range missile which hit further south into Israel. At least 6 people were wounded. Another rocket struck a northern Israeli hospital, but no one was injured. In Lebanon, officials say the death toll could be 600. The Israeli civilian and military death toll is 50. In Iraq, the number of U.S. troops could go up to 134,000. Military commanders are coming up with a plan to send an additional 5,000 troops to help control the rising sectarian violence. Yesterday, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld extended by 4 months the tours of duty for some 3,900 troops that were scheduled to leave Iraq. In eastern Afghanistan, the 3 Americans killed in yesterday's civilian helicopter crash have been identified as the wife and 2 daughters of an American contractor. 9 others died in the crash, which officials blame on the weather. On Capitol Hill, in an about-face, Congress has decided to vote on a package that would increase the minimum wage from $5.15 to $7.25 over the next 2 years. However, it will be tied to rolling back estate taxes. Nebraska Supreme Court approved the electric chair as the execution method. It is the only state which uses the chair as its only method of execution. In California, the death toll from the heat wave is now 123 people. The Central Valley was the hardest hit area. Additionally, as many as 25,000 cattle and 7,000 fowl were killed by the high temperatures. In parts of northeast Ohio, up to 9 inches of rain fell, causing rivers to overflow and floodwaters to fill the street. 100 people had to be evacuated. You're listening to QNN.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
The Commerce Department reports that in the second quarter, economic growth slowed to 2.5% rate. Consumers have also cut back on spending, and home building has decreased. Additionally, inflation went up. After a decade-long effort, Walmart announced it will sell off all of its 85 stores in Germany. Rival retailer Metro AG will purchase them, although the terms of the deal were not disclosed. Earlier this year, Walmart also pulled out of the South Korean market. Intel announced it will be slashing prices on older chips and introducing new products to compete with rival AMD. It's the largest product revamp in 6 years and includes 10 new microprocessors, including the new Core 2 Duo, which requires less power and emits less heat. Microsoft is facing concerns that its new operating system, Vista, will face further delays. A company official says, "We will ship it when it is available." Office Depot, the nation's second largest office supply chain, says its second quarter earnings rose 18% on higher sales and improved margins. Inco, the Canadian nickel mining company announced it will no longer seek to buy its rival Falcon Bridge. And Chevron is the latest oil company to announce record second quarter profits. Its earnings were $4.35 billion. Light sweet crude is trading at $73.25 a barrel today. And at Wall Street this hour, the Dow is up 136 points, the Nasdaq up 35, the S&P 500 up 15. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
Okay, talk to you.
South America.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. It's a little more than 6 minutes after the hour, and you are here with Head On with Bob Kincaid. Bob will be here in just a moment, but he wanted me to get you started with a little information from the right wing. What they want to do is they want to scare you with weapons of mass destruction. Not just Iraqi weapons of mass destruction, but any weapons of mass destruction. So without further ado, I will start you off with this. And let's see what you think of it.
With no end in sight to the two-week-long standoff at the Israeli-Lebanon border, one important question remains to be answered. What would the ramifications be across the region if a terrorist organization were to respond to Israel with a nuclear attack? Now, joining us now to discuss this very real possibility, director of the Center for Mass Destruction Defense, Cham Dallas. Last time you came here, you had a weapon that I pulled, and we actually triggered the weapon.
That's right.
Now,
scale model nuclear
what's
weapon.
Happened is we had a little piece of radiation. There are two packets, one in his pocket, one in my pocket.
That's right.
We don't know which one has the radiation. One of us has radiation in our pocket, and you have it.
Not to hope it's a liberal.
No. What a shock! Am I glowing? All right. So what? What is this? This is a radiation attack here, but how very real is this threat? What is?
It's a very real threat.
Yeah.
I spent 10 years going in and out of Chernobyl, where the Soviets managed to let loose 100 times as much radioactivity as Hiroshima and Nagasaki combined. It's a real threat for us now, unfortunately. The Al-Qaeda in particular is very focused on doing some kind of rad bomb or some kind of dirty bomb.
So what Sean or I, we haven't been told which, has in our pocket magnified, what does that do?
Well, of course, the packet that one of you has in your pocket is a safe level of radioactivity.
But we hope so.
We hope so. That's what I was told by my laboratory people.
But, sure you did.
Yeah.
But so what are the ramifications?
What's going to happen is sometime in the future, at some point in the future, there's going to be a nuclear weapon used in the United States and certainly a radiological device used. And a lot of radioactivity is going to fall on American citizens, and we're going to have to be able to find that radioactivity and get it off of them.
You say that like it's a certainty, like there's no question this is going to happen.
There's no doubt in my mind that at some point in the future we will have a radiological device, probably soon, and a nuclear device at some point 5 or 10 years out.
Who has access to these materials?
Well, we now have Pakistan, for instance, a Muslim nation, has 50 nuclear weapons. North Korea, a very unstable state, has at least 5 or 6 nuclear weapons. There are thousands of warheads, the cores of warheads that I brought on stage the last time, a mock-up of them, sitting in Russian warehouses, any one of which would be, if put inside a nuclear device, could destroy an entire city.
The biggest problem is we've got Iran, Syria, and they're funding and fomenting terror, and they use their surrogates, Hezbollah and Hamas. I mean, do you doubt that these terror groups can get a weapon? If they did it, there's no doubt they would use it against Israel, is there?
There's no doubt in my mind whatsoever that if one of these terror groups, or I should say when one of these terror groups gets a weapon, like Hezbollah.
Within the next decade,
they would use it at a time of their choosing, but they would use it.
So the likelihood is that within 10 years, it would not be shocking to you in any way for people to turn on this news channel and find out that a nuclear device has gone off in a major city around the world.
I'm certain of it.
You're certain? You have no doubt?
There's no doubt in my mind about it. It's only a matter of what the timing would be. There's a march
what
of technology
if,
going on.
What would here. Happen if it happened in Tel Aviv?
Well, we have some simulations that I gave your people. If, when these weapons are finally used by Muslim terrorists against an Israeli city, what you would have is first a fireball that would be in the central city area that you can see down in the corner. Now you can see the expansion.
What you're listening to is what happens when the frozen food delivery man arrives at your doorstep and your 81-year-old father says, go order food. 10 minutes past the hour. Welcome to Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm a little addled, I gotta admit. But there are priorities to things around here. Did you hear that? You know, sometimes it's just good to listen to the poppycock that flows through the Fox News channel, sort of isolated and in a vacuum. That's insanity. People sitting there rooting for a nuclear holocaust. I mean, I got that. Isn't that what it boils down to, Agnes?
Oh, yes. And if you notice, they gave the liberal the radioactive chip. Oh, and it gets better. There's more. It's really, really interesting.
Well, I've got places that I want to go this evening.
Go right ahead.
But no, I mean that's where we started, and you know what? Agnes is an angel and a technological goddess for having that thing ready to run while I was out talking to the frozen food guy. I mean, look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I've got, or that we're sitting here in a multi-million dollar broadcast complex. We're not. We are an American family. Right, Agnes?
That's right, Bob.
We're an American family right now whose neighbors think that probably I ball batted you.
No, it was the kitty cat.
I know. We talked about it last night. I mean, now this isn't like, you know, when the officer shows up on the domestic violence complaint and the codependent wife says, "No, I walked into a door again." No, she really ran into the post of a swing set chasing a cat. The swing set wasn't chasing the cat. She was. Journalism moment. Agnes looks a little rough right now. She's beautiful as ever. But she's got a shiner that, like the kind I used to get when I was a kid in school. Fair?
Mm-hmm.
And probably a busted schnoz, right?
Mm-hmm. It's broken.
It's broken. Yeah, it's broken. And so, you know, we're sitting here and waiting for the show to begin. And when 81-year-old parents yell... And most of you are probably familiar with it, the Schwanz guy. Schwanz guy's here. I'll be honest. I can't just say, you know, sorry, Dad. Because at 81, you know, if, you know, a good meal is one of the last remaining pleasures, it's a last remaining pleasure I want him to have. So, I'm sorry. I'll gather my wits. I'll get things together. There are issues out in the world today to talk about. And I had actually planned to talk about them. The frozen food guy was actually supposed to be here at 6. So, you know, that's what you get when you live life. when life is happening to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's reality. No car service. No one coming and picking me up and driving me downtown or uptown or midtown to fabulous studios or anything like that. Just reality. Just middle-class American family values. It's just us. And it's just a sort of a front porch conversation for the whole blessed world that we're making here. So I think we'll take a break. And when we come back, I'll delve into a little of a few of the things that I thought perhaps might be worthy of conversation radio for a Friday evening in midsummer. What this is the Head On Radio Network. Who I am is Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Planet Check. Planet Check.
Michael Franti from Spearhead talks about the new benefit CD for the nonprofit environmental law firm, Earth Justice.
I'm always involved in Earth Justice as an idea, no matter where I go.
Franti, along with artists Nora Jones, Los Lobos, Willie Nelson, and Bonnie Raitt, donated their music in support of life's absolute necessities, clean air and water.
Music today is not speaking to really what's happening on the streets. It's really important that artists come together, work on projects together, and put out unified voices about what's happening today in our planet.
In the United States alone, more than 70,000 people die per year from air pollution.
Keep on talking now. Yes, I will.
Music makes a difference. Give it a spin at wherewelive.org. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
The Homeland Security Advisory System is designed to provide warnings as the risk of terrorist acts increases. If the severe condition signified in red is declared, it's recommended that you avoid public gathering places or other high-profile locations. Public transportation may be impacted, and non-essential public and government facilities may be closed. Go to the Homeland Security website at www.dhs.gov for more information. This message has been brought to you by the Florida Division of Emergency Management, the Florida Broadcasters, and this radio station.
That's right, DJ Ted Stevens. Tubes. It's not a series of tubes. It's a series of tubes, not a big truck. Thanks to Crooks and Liars had that. Of course, it's if you go to YouTube as well, you can just search DJ Ted Stevens, and you know it's there with video. It can't. A brilliant little piece of work. Now, I'm going to try to do, and I don't know if we can, I'm going to try to do the next 2.5 hours or so without Lebanon and without Israel. It is not that I'm not interested. It's not that I don't care. But I am, it's beginning to take a psychic toll on me. So let's bring it a little closer to home, if we could, please. And by that, how about we go to, House of Representatives? There's a thought. Oh, phones. David is joining us from Maine. Welcome, David.
Good evening, Bob. How are you?
I'm a little frazzled.
You know, I'm glad you brought up that we're not going to mention Lebanon and Israel, because this ties into what I want to talk to today, and I think it's a perfect discussion because it involves a Democrat. But before I start that, I want to say I'm going to ask Alan Combs about if that radioactive material handed to him was intentional. I want to know about that.
Well, it would be nice to know if he knew in advance. Was it a piece of shtick?
That's what I want to know, if it was shtick or anything. And he's an honest guy, so I'm sure he'll give me a good answer to that. Now, the next thing I wanted to talk about was, you know those bootleggers, the bootleggers in the, on the city streets? They sell you something. They come up to you and they go, they're really aggressive. They come up to you and they go, hey, listen. I got Miami Vice here, Miami Vice, crystal clear picture, pro cam, pro shot, perfect. What, you want to buy it? What, you a pussy? It's got girls, Miami Beach, violence, action, Colin Farrell, Jamie Foxx, what, you don't want it? It's only $10. You don't got $10? Come on, you don't have $10? What's the matter? What, you want, you can't buy it? Okay, what about Spider-Man? You want Spider-Man? Spider-Man's good. Spider-Man's Marvel. It's got Tobey Maguire. It's got that hot chick. You like that hot chick, right, with the red hair? You like her, right? So, basically...
Where are you, David?
No, I mean, that's...
Is this on the streets of Augusta, Maine, or
no,
you...
No, that's when you go to the cities.
Oh, okay.
That's what they do now. They actually go up to you, Bob. I want to bring you into that world, because what I'm going to get into is about what I'm going to get into about the what I'm about to talk about.
Okay.
This is a selling of something. They aggressively sell it to you. It's... In the same way that pundits and politicians sell you on an idea or on.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds a little bit like the run-up to the Iraq War.
Right, but I'm not going to talk about war. I'm going to talk about something completely different.
Okay.
And I saw an album title, and it has nothing to do with the definition. I applied it to myself. I just grabbed it because I stole it. This guy's album title was called Dream Merchant. And that's basically what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
We're selling dreams. Now, whether they're true or not, it doesn't matter. Because the profits they make is immeasurable. They're thinking, oh, I can provide for my family, I can provide for my friends, I can provide for my associates, and look what I get for a bonus for myself. So, I was looking today, I was listening on the radio today, and there is a column that's going around, that's making the rounds on a lot of radio shows, and it's called, I Have a Plan to Destroy America. And it's by Richard D. Lamb, and the reason why I'm bringing this up is this was a speech. And this gives you an inside psychosis to a xenophobic, prejudiced Democrat. And it makes you wonder, like, did he actually give this speech in public? He was actually a former governor of Colorado from, I think, 75 to 87.
Yeah, Lamb, I remembered.
He gave this speech. And what I want to do is I want to go through all the points, all the paragraphs of this, and after every paragraph, just kind of break down and give our thoughts on it. That's what I want to do.
Okay.
Particularly this thing. Okay, so he starts out. And by the way, people, he didn't get applause, so don't think the audience is crazy. He didn't get an applause. It was so controversial, they did not give an applause to speech. And the reason why I'm bringing this up, and this is forwarded to right-wing talk shows, and they agree with this. I want to make that perfectly clear. They agree with most of these points. And when you read and when you hear it, you're going to think it's insane. So here it goes. I have a secret plan to destroy America. If you believe, as many do, that America is too smug, too white bread, too self-satisfied, too rich, let's destroy America. It is not that hard to do. History shows that nations are more fragile than their citizens think. No nation in history has survived the ravages of time. Arnold Toynbee observed that all great civilizations rise and they all fall, and that an autopsy of history would show that all great nations commit suicide. Here's my plan. So far, so good. That's the setup. Now,
yeah.
This is where the insanity starts, people. 5150, criminally insane. We must first make America a bilingual, bicultural country. History shows, in my opinion, that no nation can survive the tension, conflict, and antagonism of two competing languages and cultures. It is a blessing for an individual to be bilingual. It is a curse for a society to be bilingual. Seymour Martin, Lipset, put it this way. The histories of bilingual and bicultural societies that do not assimilate are histories of turmoil, tension, and tragedy. Canada, Belgium, Malaysia, Lebanon all faced crises of national existence in which minorities press for autonomy, if not independence. Pakistan and Cyprus have divided Nigeria, suppressed an ethnic rebellion. France faces difficulties with its Basques, Bretons, and Corsicans. Now, the first point, now I know you already have something to say about this, Bob.
No, I'm waiting.
Yeah,
I'm digesting.
Point, I want to bring this up because this is, in essence, what he is saying. Is whatever he says is true. He says no nation has that's BS. Point blank, that's BS. No nation has survived with two languages. Well, how can anyone just sit there and actually just nod their head to that? That blows your mind. It really
well, it's
something like that.
It's just intellectually dishonest, David.
It is intellectually dishonest.
I mean, there's little more to be said beyond that. So I guess the United States didn't survive the first generation of Italian immigrants or German immigrants or Russian immigrants because the first generation always speaks the language of its native of its home.
I think people should be perfectly clear. This is the beginning. If you've seen the movie American History X with Edward Norton, this is the beginning of rolling that stone down, of bringing basically a nationalist country trying to purify it, basically. This is that.
Well, sure it is.
Saying.
You know, meanwhile, I don't know what the exact number is. Most European school children get out of school speaking, what, their native tongue and two or three others? You know, it's,
I know, Bob. And now I'm going to get to the second point. Bob, it gets worse. That's what I'm saying. It gets worse as we get down to more points. I would then invent multiculturalism and encourage immigrants to maintain their own culture. I would make it an article of belief that all cultures are equal, that there are no cultural differences that are important. I would declare it an article of faith that the black and Hispanic dropout rate is only due to prejudice and discrimination by the majority. Every other explanation is out of bounds. Now, this point I want to make perfectly clear to what I think is the thing. What they're doing is they're generalizing something in such a black and white area that when you read this, this fits the whole right-wing consensus of what they believe their talking point is.
Oh, well, yeah, because, David, the nature of wingerism or republicanism, whatever you want to call it, the reason, for instance, that right-wing talk radio succeeded and it is more of a struggle to go forward with liberal or progressive talk is the fact that the right-wing talk uses the same tactics, frankly, as the Klan, all right? Whether it's the Klan, the Nazis, the Aryan Nation, the skinheads, you know, pick one. It always succeeds because you take people of at least malleable mind and you feed them information. And the information that you feed them, David, is that the problem isn't with you. The problem is with the capital, and you spell this with a capital, with the capital O, other. It's the other's fault. It's the black people's fault, the Asians' fault, the Jews' fault, the Arabs' fault.
Exactly. And when he says multiculturalism, he doesn't believe it. I believe that these people don't study any other race but their own. They're so filtered, it's like a water filter. They think that all these cultures, they have some kind of germ attached to them. And they can't study them because that's not me. But, you know, the problem with this thinking is you can't go back to antiquated 1950. It's never going to happen.
It didn't happen the first time through.
Right, right, exactly.
There is no Leave It to Beaver culture, David.
Right. They got sold that dream by a dream merchant, and it wasn't true. And they can't believe that it wasn't true, so they have to keep hanging on to it. Another thing I wanted to bring up was that the fact that this guy... This is a perfect case study, Bob, and I think that we should do this more. Always ask a right-winger or ask someone to be sarcastic and ask them, what would you do to destroy America? And all of their talking points and all of their beliefs and all of their views of their hatred for anything that isn't their view is going to come out in full force just like this.
Oh, sure it does. And see, There's a lie or a fraud that underlies all of this that we seldom even scratch, David. And that is, you know, we talk about, multiculturalism. You realize, I'm sure, I know, and most of the people who listen to this program, liberals, there is no such thing as an American culture.
And even if there is a beginning of an American culture, and it's in the birth stages, that there are... I don't even understand why you don't think why anyone wouldn't think multiculturalism doesn't exist.
Well, American culture is multiculturalism,
right,
from the very beginnings. Whether it was look at the Southern Appalachian, whatever. That is Scots, Irish, English, and German all blended. There's an old saying that I love. It says, "The English came and built a house." The Germans came and built a barn. The Scottish came and built a still. You know, that's the eastern seaboard of the United States for the first 150 years of its existence. There, it's multiculturalism and it's aculturism. There was a distinct attempt, David, to get away from the staid societal norms with which they had been saddled. You know, if you were born in France, Germany, England, wherever, you were born into a classed system, and you could never rise. You could get to be as rich as Croesus, but you could never rise out of your class. It was as structured and as strict and rigid as anything that is complained about in the Hindu caste system.
It seems to me that, for example, on this third point, this is what he says. Now we are getting Timothy McVeigh territory. We can make the United States a Hispanic Quebec without much effort. The key is to celebrate diversity rather than unity. As Benjamin Swartz said in the Atlantic Monthly recently, the apparent success of our multi-ethnic and multicultural experiment might have been not by tolerance but by hegemony. Without the dominance that once dictated ethnocentrically and what it meant to be an American, we are left with only tolerance and pluralism to hold us together. I would encourage all immigrants to keep their own language and culture. I would replace the melting pot metaphor with the salad bowl metaphor. It is important to ensure that we have various culture subgroups living in America, reinforcing their differences rather than Americans emphasizing their similarities. And see, what this idiot did, and what this nut did, was he basically just said right here in the third point what America should be about, which is, he's being sarcastic. So what he basically said was, this is what America's about. It's about keeping your own identity.
Well, of course it is. Look, there's this is intertangled. It's intermeshed, David.
Right.
The right wing, the right wing cultural stuff. You know, these are people. Again, I go back to the argument about the other. The thing you've got to do, if you're going to succeed, you know, like what we're talking about here, you've got to have an other to demonize, and you've got to create a fearful public. That's the purpose of creating the coward nation that I talk about so frequently on this program. Make a fearful public, and that way you can take it and. You got to keep your own identity. You know, I, for one, am grateful for the little international market down the road in Charleston, West Virginia, where I can go and buy authentic Thai curry paste, okay? I like that.
Right.
Because I can't get it at the big box store, and I can't get it at Kroger's. I can't get it at the corporate chains. I love the fact that I could walk into La Tienda Mexicana when I was down in Alabama and buy these wonderful, wonderful beans that aren't sold in America.
You know,
outside of those stores.
You know what it is, Bob? They like multiculturalism in a different way. They like it to be a prop on the TV, in their music, in their pop culture.
And they like it to be a whipping boy.
And that too, but they don't want to say that they don't enjoy other cultures and enjoy other nationalities and ethnicities type of interest. So what they do is they say, well, I am not that, but I'll take a little of that. It's like a buffet table, and I'll take a little bit of this and that and this. Okay, now you go away.
Well, how many times have you heard somebody who can't speak half-decent English say, we need to set up English as the second language? No. I mean, you know, English needs to be the national language. Okay, fine. We'll set that up as soon as you get out of class and bring me back the A. You know, it's what you're pointing at through all of this, David. I think you're pointing at hypocrisy.
Right.
I think you're pointing at fraud, and that's what I try to point out on this program.
It's hypocrisy and lunacy. You know what it's like? It's like Perry Como doing Tutti Frutti, and not admitting.
Or Ethel Merman singing.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not admitting to where it comes from. It's just like saying, well, Perry Como, he's got a great voice, and I can't. Oh, wow, that's a great version he did. And then when you say, well, so-and-so did that version 20 years ago. And
or William Shatner singing Rocket Man.
Right, exactly.
It's a fraud.
It's a fraud. It's populating a myth in our culture and injecting it. And he continues to go on. He says, having done all this, I would make our fastest-growing demographic group the least educated. I would add a second underclass, unassimilated, undereducated, and antagonistic to our population. I would have this second underclass have a 50% dropout rate from school. Now, you see, this right here...
Now, there's some truth in that, David.
Right. Right.
Because, but the thing is, the Republicans don't want to educate the underclass. The Republicans, you know, they're pro-life, so necessarily we can't possibly advocate birth control. We can't possibly try to, you know, we know statistically from the Clinton years to the Bush years, we know that abortions go down when economic possibilities go up. But you know, we can't advocate that. We've just got to, you know, we got to descend on places like Jackson, Mississippi, and try to close down the last women's health clinic that exists in that state, and then turn around and criminalize crossing the state line for an abortion.
Right.
This is eugenics, David. This is the deliberate creation. They're creating the underclass. They are creating the slave class that they desire to return to.
And this point right here, I think it really hits home. He said, I would then get the big foundations, big businesses, to give these efforts lots of money. I would invest in ethnic identity, and I would establish the cult of victimology. I would get all minorities to think their lack of success was all the fault of the majority. I would start a grievance industry blaming all minority failure on the majority population. Now this point gets to me, because at the same time, they're trying to say, well, ethnic people, they just get handouts. I mean, and they don't even realize that they've gotten handouts all their life. Everyone gets handouts. I don't understand this concept. Everyone is handed something. It's a sharing society. Nobody is truly independent in that sense. You know what I mean?
Well, sure. Everything in this country is subsidized in one way or another. Farmers, good God, Archer Daniels Midland, Monsanto, the huge industrial farming complex, it exists solely on government subsidies. You know, I interviewed Michael Pollan in regard to his book, The Omnivore's Dilemma, and he talked about the way that farmers are, well, Iowa, you know, there's almost nothing grown in Iowa except number two field corn now. And I don't care how long you boil an ear of that stuff, David, you can't eat it. It's not made to be eaten by human beings in its natural state. It's there to produce modified food starch and corn sugar solids and corn and high fructose corn syrup and the ascorbic acid and on and on and on. And it's all there by virtue of welfare.
Right. Again, it has to deal with, and by the way, if my phone goes out, it's because my battery's low. So.
I heard you beep.
Oh, you heard beeping?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry then.
That's okay. No sweat.
Okay.
No, but it comes back to your original premise, all of this does, and it's about create the other. You know, We subsidized Enron. We subsidized, you know, I mean, do you remember when the numbers came out on the tax refunds that the Republican Congress gave to Enron and they still went belly up?
Right.
That was welfare. But see, and it goes all the way back to Ronnie Reagan when he campaigned and created the stereotype of the welfare queen. You know, who shows up at the food bank in a brand new Cadillac with eight children and carrying her ninth because she gets a fresh check for every baby. That's just a load of BS.
This guy's telling you that movie on the corner that he wants you to buy.
Yeah.
And see, the thing that I want people to notice is he's not just selling it to you people. He's aggressively pitching to you. So for every 20 people he doesn't get, he's going to get that one person to pass it on and be like, oh, wow, this makes a lot of sense. And there will be no research involved, nothing. Just that person will go along thinking these sad, tragic, tunnel vision type of ideas and views. And it just continues.
And we lost David. Agnes, dear, thank you. Well, we knew that David's battery would go out, but let's keep the phone moving. Go to Ed. Hey, Ed, welcome to Andy. See, she didn't write it down. She said, and I had to read lips. I thought it was Ed. It's Andy. Hey, Andy, good evening.
Hey, man, how's it going?
I'm okay, getting better.
Wicked. Well, it looks like we're talking about class warfare again, Bob.
I think we are.
Well, it's because that's all we do. We
and our class is losing.
Well, no, that's not true. Remember, Bob, our class pretty much, well, actually does the whole thing everywhere in the world. We're not losing. We have the potential to be pushed back a bit, but we're not going to lose. There's not enough of them for us to lose. Not sure if everybody loses by them destroying the world.
Well, that's... And look, there's every possibility of that. I guess I'm not in the best of temper this evening.
No, I'd agree. There is definitely a possibility that they could just destroy the world. I mean, you know, Israel's got that policy already. If we go, everybody has it. which annoys me, frankly.
Well, it does.
Well, you know, it's like, look, Israel, if they're really going to destroy you and push you out of Israel, well, then come to Europe, we'll find you somewhere. Go to America, we'll find you somewhere.
Yeah, bless his heart, BartCop.com. BartCop has been offering most of Oklahoma to Israel for about 10 years now. You know, you want to make the desert bloom. Lots of desert in Oklahoma.
Yeah, Oklahoma.
I've advocated Baja California, and we bring in the Disney Corporation to build the New Jerusalem.
Yeah, no, I've heard that idea. That was a great idea.
You know, Baja's about as wide as Israel. Yeah.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, look, what are they arguing over? They're arguing over the one bit of land that hasn't got oil in it.
Yeah.
Which is frankly ridiculous. But, you know, what can you do? You can't talk people out of it when they've got one of those religious nuttery things on.
Oh, I know. And I've got, and I haven't decided whether to go with it or not. I kind of decided against it when I said we wouldn't talk about Israel and Lebanon this evening, but, you know, I've got some more fun from Deuteronomy. You know, more words to die for.
Oh, well, look, the Bible, okay, quaint story, interesting moral basis.
Twisted moral basis, even.
Interesting moral basis in the sense that it can contradict itself so blatantly and people can still read it and accept it. You know, I mean, because you get two types of Christian. And I suppose you get two types of Muslim and Jew and everything as well, but you get two types of Christian. You get the people that look at the Bible and go, all that crazy stuff, bit much. I'll just take it as a moral, thanks. And then you get the people that go, all that crazy stuff, thank you, can have some more.
Yeah, well, the literalists.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, these people don't give a damn about anybody else. That includes their wife, their kids, their congregation, if they're a pastor. They either believe it because they have absolutely nothing else in their life, and they've given up hope, and it's the easiest thing to do is to believe in some savior coming at some point soon, and everyone drifting off into heaven that deserves it. Very easy. I can see why people get beguiled by that sort of.
Well, yeah, I mean, live on hay day by day, you'll get pie in the sky when you die. There's basically two. You say there's two kinds of people, two kinds of this, two kinds of that. There's two ways of looking at this world.
Yeah.
There are those who suffer through it and think that it's going to get better when they breathe out and don't breathe in again, which just doesn't, I don't get it.
Yeah.
And there are the other people who say, you know, this is what we got, and it chaps my butt when we let it not be everything it could possibly be.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, you know, it comes down to sort of people who are generally positive and people who are generally negative. I mean, I'm a pessimist, but I'm generally positive, and if that sounds contradictory, well, I'm sorry, but it's not.
You're an optimistic pessimist, just like me.
Absolutely.
You're fairly positive things are going to go bad, but if they don't go bad, you get to be pleasantly surprised.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, you know, anybody who's done anything to do with actual education soon loses their religious intensity. What I'd suggest is most of these people who are so religiously intense and on all sides are simply uneducated. And it's not their fault that they're nuts, you know. I'm keen not to blame people where it's not their fault. That doesn't mean they don't deserve the blame for being fascist, but you can understand why they are. You know what I mean?
Well, and you're sort of pointing out the differentiation between the followers and the leaders.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, people like. Well, we won't talk about Bush now, but people like, you know, those crazy fundamentalist evangelical types.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not, we know they're not in it for God. We know they're in it for the money. I mean.
Well, let's see, Dobson's outfit raked in $140 million last year.
Yeah.
And they're not feeding the hungry, and they're not clothing the naked.
Of course not, because that would be,
They're out there funding legal projects to overturn the Constitution of the United States.
Yeah. I mean, you guys have such a bizarre country, you really do. I mean, you have a country where the people who are convinced they're right, and I mean convinced they're right, because we wouldn't say we're right the whole time, we just want to muddle through and get along as best we can, don't we?
Well, we'd like to sort it out and find the best answer.
We're never going to be right as such. History will always be able to judge faults with everything everyone does.
And we move toward our best impression of correctness.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, what do Americans want from history? What do you want there to say about you? Do you want to say Americans an interesting people who once inhabited the northern United States that had a habit of electing people that wanted to kill them all into government?
Well, no, what will history say about us? Well, we've got a president who says, who cares? We'll all be dead. He said that, Andy.
I know, but he's a moron.
Well, he is, but the thing is, this is the, and maybe at a distance you don't quite sense it the way if you're living here that you do. And I'm not downgrading any of your opinions. I hope you understand.
Absolutely.
But if you live here, you really do get a sense for the fact that whether we like it or not, the president of the United States, and I don't know, maybe it's magic, sets the tone for this nation. And to the extent, you know, I heard from the right wing all during the Clinton years that, you know, America's going to hell. We've lost our moral compass. Everybody's out there getting oral sex, you know.
The only people that believe that are the right wing on your side, don't you? I mean, nobody else in the world was even remotely interested in whether Monica or...
No, but I'm talking about what's going on here.
I know, but the point is that the people of America are so... I mean, you've been so badly twisted by these fascists. You don't know up from down. Do you know what I mean? It's, your whole society's become like you lot against them lot. You know, I mean, talking about multiculturalism going to divide America. Well, you know what? I see a whole bunch of Hispanics and black people siding with people like yourself, Bob. I don't see too many people of interesting colors siding with those people. But, you know, that's kind of besides the point.
No, but I understand what you're saying, but... When George Bush says, you know, who cares about history, we'll all be dead, it sort of gives a pass to to that cancerous little knot of people who follow him, Andy.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I mean, anything that these people do will give some kind of...
But it's created, and I mean, it's palpable. You can sense it if you talk to people on a day-to-day basis. There is a carpe diem mentality. You know, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. You know, a year ago today, gasoline here was $2.14 a gallon.
Yeah.
It's $3 a gallon now, and people are still buying. You know, they're still buying the SUVs. They're still consuming at a tremendous rate.
Well,
they can't get the coal out of the ground fast enough.
They're not buying SUVs very much anymore.
Oh well, actually, the GMC Tahoe had a tick upward in sales in the last quarter.
Yeah, but Bob, I mean, we're talking about a few hundred more sold than the previous quarter. It's not like, you know, on the whole, SUV sales are going down. People are becoming saner about the whole thing. And I mean, especially now that you've got churches starting to split from each other on the kind of... Because too many churches, I think part of your problem in the States, and to a degree over here as well, but the churches tend not to criticize each other. And so you'll have those churches that are perfectly moderate and believe the Bible should be read, not necessarily literally, and, you know, don't think you should pollute the environment and don't think you have a right to carry a gun and drive an SUV. And they've been quiet the whole time. And they're starting to speak up now about things like, you know, environmental change and the nature of sin. I mean, let's face it, if you believe in sin, then driving an SUV and having a conspicuously consumptive lifestyle is an expression of sin. And the Bishop of London was absolutely damn right to say that.
Yes, he was, and he was promptly told to shut the hell up by the Royal Auto Club.
Yeah, I phoned up the RAC earlier on today and made a complaint and told them I will be phoning up to speak to their chief executive and arrange an interview for the Head On Radio Network, and at that point, she hung up.
Yes! Well, 0 for 1 so far, Andy, but don't give up.
Oh, no, not at all. Well, you know, I won't phone until I can actually record the conversation because I want everyone to be able to hear what happens when I phone these different companies up and stuff. That's going to be one of my features for your show. I'm going to phone various different companies and just ask them questions about their activities.
I think that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, we're going to start with the big ones, Coca-Cola, McDonald's, people like that.
Sure.
I mean, Coca-Cola, the first question is going to be asked is, so did Coca-Cola actually have anything to do with the assassination of those people in India?
Well, exactly. I mean, the University of Michigan here in the U.S. forced its infrastructure to divest all holdings in Coca-Cola. They don't even sell Coca-Cola on campus anymore, I don't think.
Yeah, a lot of our universities have done the same thing.
Because of what happens in places like Colombia.
Yeah, yeah, in India. I mean, they've destroyed the water table for like a million people or something in India.
Have a Coke and a smile, Andy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, as long as you don't mind your smile, you'll be on a whole bunch of missing teeth.
Well, yeah, it is sort of a generation's crystal meth. I know people have had to have entire bone restructuring done on their lower jaws because the phosphoric acid in Coca-Cola literally ate it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's got to be one of the most corrosive things we've ever made.
Well, you've done the trick with the nail, right?
Oh, well, no, you just put a whole tooth in there over here. Watch it disappear overnight.
Jeez.
You know, like the biggest baby tooth that a child loses.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of them will disappear overnight in a glass cake.
Now, see, I've done the nail, but never the tooth. I didn't have one to spare. But, yeah, you can drop like a 16-penny nail in and wait for a couple of days and it's gone.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we allow these filthy, filthy fascists to sell this stuff to our kids. Why? Who asked for Coke? Whoever asked for Coke? But what do we get told every time someone makes a complaint about the health of something like Coke or a food? Oh, it's consumer choice.
Well, oh, yeah, you want to you're a communist. You're the nanny state. You want to take it? That's a load of crap. You know, if kids were out there drinking arsenic, would we want to take arsenic away? Of course we would.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, we have a reason in Britain that we learn about for the reason for our food standards, and that's because during what we call the Victorian period, or what you guys call the robber baron period, we had people selling candle wax as sweets with a bit of brown powder on it to make it chocolate. We had people selling glass, ground up glass as sugar. Yeah?
Yeah.
And all this happened in our history, and all of it's noted down, and that's why we have such huge, hugely stringent food standards. And your American corporations are doing their damnedest to get it all undone.
Right.
I mean, well, you know...
Because they're immortal, and they can't be called on the carpet. You look at what my senator, Robert Byrd, voted in favor of, the rollback of the right to engage in a class action suit against a corporation in a... in a federal court, you know, boom, that jurisdiction's gone now.
Mm.
And so, you know, if 200 people get butchered, they have to go state by state by state by state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's done because it's easier for a corporation to buy off a local county judge than it is to try to get to a federal one.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that really sort of holds up for you on that deal is that local county judges, although easier to buy in the sense that they're cheaper, are also more difficult to buy in the sense that you'll have a lot more, like, bullheaded, no, actually, hang on a minute,
yeah,
type. And
that's, right.
That's what you need. I mean, you know, look at the way your corporations act in front of the most powerful court in the world, which is the European Court. I mean, the European Court literally can make or break corporations. Because if you don't have access to the European market, then you get outcompeted. Do you know what I mean? If you're not selling to Europe as a corporation, then you can basically... Europe's the biggest market, so if you're not selling to Europe, you can forget making money. Your other corporations in competition with you will put...
Well, yeah, I noticed Microsoft sort of said, yes, sir, a whole lot quicker to the EU...
Well, they're still holding out for appeals and stuff, but basically what's standing at the moment is $600 million in fines, and if the EU get their way, it's going to be $150 million a month on top of that in fines until Microsoft yield.
Well, you know, I think... I wish the EU well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, because, I mean, if this happens, then things like Linux and all these other... pieces of software that are fantastically well made are going to be usable for everything. I mean, Linux will be able to play games. You know, I'll be able to just dump Microsoft in the nearest bin. And I can use all my games on Linux. I can be able to do all my internet work on Linux. Do you know what I mean?
Because
the main reason Microsoft are the big thing is because they've been so openly fascist about the control of their apparent like rights. And, you know, yeah, hopefully Europe will win. I mean, God knows we need it. Nobody else is going to do it. You know, I mean, China make a suggestion. Microsoft and all the other companies just go, yeah, okay, we'll do that. Fascism works perfectly for them.
Well, and, yeah, and what you said the other night about the civilized world not including South America.
Yeah.
I know. Andy, thank you so much.
No worries, but everybody remember, class warfare is an ongoing struggle, and it has never stopped, and it probably won't ever stop, but they can't beat us in the end.
All right. Very well said.
Have a good weekend.
Later, Andy.
Love to Agnes. Bye, mate.
Absolutely. Bye. Time for the news. And he's right. The struggle never ends. From top to bottom. They struggle against us, we struggle against them, but there's more of us. Right? Yeah. All right, we'll be back. I'm Bob. This is the Head On Radio Network.
News Network at the top of the hour.
This is the Quality News Network. Israeli air and artillery attacks continue to strike in southern Lebanon, more than 112 of them today. As many as a dozen Lebanese civilians and 26 Hezbollah rebels died. Hezbollah said it fired a new long-range missile which hit southeast of Haifa. In a press conference today at the White House, President Bush and British Prime Minister Tony Blair announced support of a UN ceasefire resolution. Both rejected calls for an immediate ceasefire favored by most European and Arab countries. The combined civilian and military Israeli death toll in the last 17 days of crisis is 51. The death toll in Lebanon is at least 460 and may be as high as 600. Following 3 days of Israeli shelling and the death of four unarmed peacekeepers, the UN is closing down its observer post on the Israeli-Lebanese border. Israel has apologized and says the missile attacks were accidental. The Bush administration announced a $4.6 billion arms deal to Arab states the White House designates as moderate. Saudi Arabia alone will receive nearly $3 billion worth of weaponry, including battle tanks and Apache helicopters. The five permanent members of the U.N. Security Council announced today Iran has until the end of August to suspend uranium enrichment. Economic and diplomatic sanctions are threatened. Also at the U.N. today, the world body told America to shut down its secret detention facilities. The U.N. is demanding the U.S. permit the International Red Cross access to those prisoners. In Iraq, the number of U.S. troops will increase. This week, President Bush agreed to beef up forces in Baghdad to stop escalating sectarian violence, which is claiming at least 100 lives daily. Congress has agreed to vote on whether to increase the minimum wage. The $2.10 hourly increase would be approved only if estate taxes, mostly associated with the wealthiest taxpayers, are eliminated or reduced. In California, the death toll from the 13-day heat wave there is now 139 people, as well as 25,000 cattle and 700,000 fowl. In northeast Ohio, nearly 10 inches of rain flooded river streets and towns. At least 600 residents have been rescued. The UN Human Rights Committee today said the U.S. should allow the District of Columbia to elect a voting member of Congress. The committee says the lack of such representation violates international law. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business News is next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Second quarter economic growth slowed in the U.S. to a 2.5% rate. Inflation increased as consumer spending and home construction decreased. Chevron enjoyed record second quarter profits. The oil company cited earnings of $4.35 billion. Analysts say Americans can expect to continue to see increased airfares. Domestic airlines are posting higher profits for the first time in 5 years. Walmart says it will sell its stores in Germany, all 85 of them. A rival retailer will buy them. Terms were not disclosed. Walmart pulled out of the South Korean market earlier this year. Release of Microsoft's new operating system for the first time in 5 years. Light sweet crude settled at $73.20 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Gold finished trading at $646.90 an ounce. At the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow was up 119 points at 11,219. The NASDAQ was up 40 at 2,094. The S&P 500 was up 15 at 1,278. Office Depot saw second quarter earnings increase 18% and release of Microsoft's new operating system, Vista, has been delayed again. You can find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, we're back, and here at the remote, undisclosed location, the home of the Head On Radio Network, all the frozen foodstuffs are put away. Agnes, why do you shake your head, honey? It's fun. This is life. I mean, Agnes isn't feeling so good. You wouldn't feel so good either. I mean, I feel like Burgess Meredith to her Rocky. Adrian.
Oh, don't leave.
Rock, you got to get up and produce the program. But all is well. Now, we carp and we complain. We fuss. But all is not bad. Many things in this country are good. For instance, This past Wednesday, there was a party. Were you invited? I got my invitation too late. But there was a party. There was a party at the Department of Energy where Secretary Samuel W. Bodman joined Senator Pete Domenici and Congressman Joe Barton to celebrate the EPA Act at 1. The Energy Policy Act of 2005 turned a year old. That means, you understand, of course, they were celebrating the Bush Energy corporate giveaway, Bill. And of course you weren't invited. America's first comprehensive energy legislation in over a decade. And frankly, we could have gone another decade without it, considering what it turned out to be. They will highlight progress towards implementing the act intended to increase the United States' energy security and reduce its dependence on sources of energy from unstable regions of the world. You know, if we had film footage, it would be of something out of Animal House. You know, half the energy executives running around half naked, half crazed on Cristal. Because of what you and me gave them, let them have. Unstable regions of the world. It is worth remembering. A year ago, before this thing came into effect, as I mentioned in the first hour, the average national gas price was at $2.14. Don't know about you, I'm paying $3 a gallon. And for more than 20 years, the fuel economy standards are stuck at 27.5 miles per gallon. Haven't changed in 20 years. 20 years to learn a lesson. And we haven't. We just haven't. The folks at Think Progress also note, five of the world's largest energy companies are expected to report combined second quarter profits next week of over $30 billion. You wonder now why our friend Greg Palast refers to the 101st Airborne as the ExxonMobil Oil Exploration Brigade? It's what they've been turned into. What a shame. What a shame. Just what a darn shame. The celebration of the bill held on Capitol Hill was by representatives of industry, representatives, that means lobbyists and executives, of industries who are benefiting from tax incentives available through the Energy Policy Act of 2005. Now, in our conversation with Jeff Goodell this past Monday, we talked about one of the sin fuels. Remember sin fuels? Did you ever there's so much that we don't bother to take a look at because it's not... We're busy. We're working people. We don't have time to fret about sin fuels. And God knows most newspapers don't have time to report on it either. A wonderful, excellent reporter down the river at the Charleston Gazette did an award-winning series on sin fuels. His name is Paul Nyden, N-Y-D-E-N. If you want to, I don't even know if it's still up or not, but you can go and read about it. Corporate welfare. We gave humongous tax breaks to corporations to literally spray diesel fuel on piles of coal. It got to be such a nice dodge that people like Marriott were getting involved with it. Like I said, I don't know if the series is still available. If it is and you're interested in energy issues, you should read it. If you want to go and look for it, the Charleston Gazette website is WV Gazette. WV, like in West Virginia, Gazette, GAZETTE.com. Now, they haven't come up with any tax breaks for you, have they? Oh, wait a minute. You got mailed a check in 2001 that turned out to be a loan against your coming income your coming tax debt? Talk about ice clinking in the glasses. Takes a hell of a lot of nerve to throw a party for an energy act that has done nothing but hurt the people who carry America on its back. This is, well, one of the commenters said, you would think a rapist would at least have the common sense not to crow about how wonderful the lovemaking was for his victim. But, that, you know, that's par for the course. That's par for the course here. There was debate and a vote scheduled, and I have yet to find out. Maybe one of you can. As we came on the air, I was still trying to find out whether or not the vote had been taken today. There was a vote scheduled today on the minimum wage. What? Didn't hear about that? Well, that you weren't supposed to. It was a Republican. It was one of those Republican scams. We'll talk about it in a moment. We've got to take a break. When we come back, though, the minimum wage. You remember? Don't get too excited, though. Okay. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free, and it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
The president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
This is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a brand new show here on the Horn, the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Tune in Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Agnes is trying to perk me up. This helps. Twenty minutes past the hour. Yeah, everybody dance. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. One note. I blathered a moment ago about $3 a gallon gas. We're all dealing with it. Now, I can't speak for anybody else, but we literally do not drive anywhere if we do not have to. The vehicle sits idle if it is possible to. Because frankly, I'm not at a place where I can let the oil company, the gasoline companies, I can't let them replace buying milk for the children. Now, I'm not trying to overplay that hand. But these are the hellish choices that are being forced on America right now. Milk, food, medicine, or gasoline. What did the Think Progress note say? The record first quarter profit, the record profits in the quarter for of $30 billion. Well, it's not that, we're not going to report record profits here at the at the Kincaid Mansion.
We do just fine.
Yeah, sure, we do just fine. But we'd do finer if we weren't paying $3 a gallon for gas.
That's true.
But here's the fun part. This is the part where we get played for rubes and suckers and hicks and jackdaws. This time next year, when it's $4.25 a gallon gas, that $3 a gallon's going to look pretty darn good. Will we have a Democratic Congress by then? I hope so. I sincerely hope so. I'm willing to work toward it. Are you? Because there should be someone in our political structure that can call a Secretary of Energy on his just profound lack of judgment or sympathy for the American middle class when he throws parties to celebrate corporate welfare giveaways. Don't you think? Now, backing up, I mentioned the minimum wage. You I don't know, unless you work for minimum wage, you might not even know what it is. In 1996 or so, it went up to $5.15 an hour. Woohoo! Don't spend it all in one place. 1996. It is 10 years later. The minimum wage is still. At $5.15 an hour. And the Republicans, they've given themselves a $3,300 pay raise. Because, they work so hard. $3,300. And they're about to get hit over the head with it. So a consideration. A consideration of the minimum wage was scheduled for a vote either today or tomorrow. And I have not seen a report since that can tell me whether or not it did take place. But this is one of those moments where if you wanted to kick and scream and fuss, you certainly could. This current Republican proposal regarding the minimum wage is one of the most ugly, hateful, cynical pieces of politics that I have seen in a long, long time. Because it's designed to fail. It is a poison. It's one of those poison pill bills, and you know what those mean and what that means. This thing has so many riders and amendments attached to it that nobody in their right mind could vote in favor of it. It's simply amazing. I'm talking about a bill that would raise the minimum wage from $5.15 an hour to $7.25 an hour over a matter of years. Years. 10 years without a rise in the minimum wage, and we're going to wait a few more years to get it up to $7.25. A single individual working 40 hours a week at minimum wage cannot stay off, cannot stay out of the federal poverty standards. God knows if it's a person, his spouse, and a child, they're just living in financial ruin. And odds are, by the way, in case any, you know, the Chamber of Commerce and all the right-wing freaks and goons, well, you know, it's only college students and high school kids working after-school jobs who make minimum wage. This is the part where you get to say, screw them, they're lying. Most minimum wage jobs are held by people trying to keep families alive in this nation. And the Republicans put forward a bill that says, well, you know, we'll raise it, we'll bring it up to $7.25 an hour in a couple or 3 years. $3,300 they gave themselves a raise this year, $3,300. And it's going to take them years, literally years, to bring the minimum wage to $7.25. But that's not what makes this a poison pill bill. Attached to this bill are tax giveaways for the poor little millionaires. Poor little millionaires with their faces pressed up against the window panes, staring inside the comfortable, warm homes of the working poor. Poor little millionaires. No millionaires left behind. Tax breaks upon tax breaks upon tax breaks upon tax breaks so that no legislator, no member of the House with any morals, any conscience, could possibly vote for this. And why is it designed this way? Because, of course, to the Republican Party, you know, power and politics mean far more than the good of the nation. They're not concerned with the minimum wage. They just want to be able to, and this is how it plays out. You know this is how it plays out. All they want to be able to do is to say, well, we put a minimum wage bill up there. We tried to raise the minimum wage, but the Democrat Party stopped your minimum wage. Why wouldn't they vote for the minimum wage? We tried to give America's working poor a break, but the Democratic Party wouldn't let you. Wouldn't let it happen. They stopped it. They voted against it. At what point does this become a moral issue? At what point does this become a moral issue? Now, if you want to, you can call your member of the... Well, it's too late now, I guess. But there was a hope that it might be recommitted, a motion to recommit. In other words, send it back to committee and get all the crap pulled out of it. I mean, among other things, the elimination of the estate tax. You know, the Paris Hilton tax was attached to raising poor people a little, you know, up to where they can see the edge of the economic gutter. Bill Samuel is a lobbyist for the AFL-CIO. And he said adding the estate tax to the minimum wage is the mother of all poison pills. It can't possibly pass the Senate. Where are our message specialists? Where are they? We have been hammered over the head with judicial goobers and goons and gomers. And the likes of Bill Frist stands on the floor of the Senate and says, this good individual deserves a straight up or down vote. If you don't like him, don't vote for him. If you do, vote for him. But they deserve an up or down vote. These are far too good individuals. Was there a Democrat who stood up in the House of Representatives and said, this bill, a raise in a minimum wage, deserves an up or down vote? Because you see, attaching a tax break for millionaires and billionaires to a raise in the very lowest amount of money that is paid to American working people, you know, that's not a straight up or down vote. And of course, you know, you understand that the Paris Hilton tax can't stand a straight up or down vote, because if you give the Paris Hilton tax a straight up or down vote, it won't pass. That's the way these godforsaken Republicans operate. Senator Ted Kennedy, he said it's political blackmail to say that the only way that minimum wage workers can get a raise is to give a tax giveaway to the wealthiest Americans. He also said members of Congress raise their own pay, no strings attached. Surely common decency suggests that minimum wage workers deserve the same respect. They do. But not from the Republican Party. I'm Bob.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell.
The split hurt the labor movement. We have worked very hard to mitigate the worst effects of it, but it hurt the labor movement.
AFL-CIO Organizing Director Stuart Acuff. It's been a year since several unions left the AFL-CIO, and Acuff says it's made unity and solidarity more difficult, but much of the damage has been patched up with thousands of local affiliates of the disaffiliated unions returning to the AFL-CIO at the state and local levels. Acuff says in the past year, the AFL-CIO has launched a robust organizing effort with unions like the UAW, CWA, and AFT moving millions of additional dollars into organizing efforts. Politically, Acuff says this November's elections will reveal whether the split has hurt labor's ability to get worker-friendly candidates elected.
It would be a very sad thing indeed if the split in some way hurt our effort to elect a pro-worker Congress, because we certainly need to stop this right-wing assault on working families.
Acuff says the working relationship with the disaffiliated unions is difficult, but the AFL-CIO's goal is still to someday return those unions to the AFL-CIO fold.
When seven unions came together last year to form the Change to Win Labor Federation, some of them breaking off from the AFL-CIO, headlines and critics hailed it as an end to the labor movement. Greg Tarpinian is executive director of Change to Win. He says the detractors have been proven wrong, as the federation has made great strides in the past year by working together from both ends of the supply chain. Right now, the member unions are working with Unite Here in a major national hotel contract battle.
For example, in support of the Hotel Workers Rising campaign, been able to reach, because of the working together of all of our affiliates, have been able to reach workers at every facility of major hotel targets around the country.
Tarpinian said that while the Young Federation has accomplished much in the past 10 months, since the organization officially formed, there is still much work to be done on the ultimate goal.
We have not, you know, fundamentally changed the equation between workers and employers in the society, and that's our long-term strategic objective. And we are very, very focused, and like like a laser beam on the question of organizing people in the workplace.
Here's today's economic report. The real American economy is the working family economy. Real wages in this economy are dropping. Median household income is down for five straight years. Healthcare costs soaring with fewer employers offering health insurance. Pensions are being wiped out. Inflation is up. Gasoline prices through the roof. Job creation isn't keeping up with population growth. And the jobs that are being created pay less than those being lost. That's the view from the kitchen table, and that's the economic reality U.S. working families face. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Minutes and a little bit more before the hour, halfway through this Friday night edition. I hope your weekend is starting out as well, better than ours here. No, Agnes, it's not bad, but I feel so bad for you, darling.
Okay, I'll be back. I'm good.
Now I want you to get an idea. Now I blathered on about the minimum wage. And to me, it's a moral choice, it's an ethical choice. Frankly, it's a good capitalistic choice to put more money in the hands of the working poor so that the working poor can do what the working poor does and put the money back in the economy. But I'm crazy that way, I guess. Let's see what the right wing thinks about it. What we've got here is Joe, my assistant mysteriously died in my office and happened to be beautiful and had to have her autopsy done by a guy who'd had his pathology license ripped by the state of Missouri, Scarborough, and John Stossel, who gets beat up, slapped down by professional wrestlers. Well, at least he's not out there opening Al Capone's vault, I guess. But yeah, the Joe Scarborough, John Stossel, on the minimum wage, let it speak for itself.
Amazon.com and New York Times, that book is still selling like hotcakes.
Good.
And you talk
Maybe
about,
this will help.
You talk about global warming in there. I'll tell you where I come from. I always tell my viewers, I believe in global warming. I think it's happening. Fine, but at the same time, for Al Gore and Bill Clinton,
dear heart, is this our clip?
All right, John Stossel, author of Myths, Lies, and Downright Stupidity, and Dave Sirota, author of Hostile Takeover. We're going to look at the minimum wage. According to Mr. Stossel, the myth is a higher minimum wage helps workers. The truth is a higher minimum wage helps some workers but hurts others. John, your thought.
We all want to raise people's wages, but assuming the government can just set the wage is better than supply and demand is such nonsense. It assumes every employer has a fixed number of workers. But we don't have people washing windshields in gas stations anymore because the minimum wage makes it foolish to hire a kid to give an entry-level worker a shot.
This thing's back in Congress. A lot of states are either passing it or discussing it. How many people get the minimum wage across the country? This is a data from your own book.
3%.
Bingo. Dave Sirota, 3%, and it hurts some people? What's your take?
Well, listen, John, I would encourage you to stop reciting these dishonest talking points and the chatter you're hearing on the cocktail party circuit, because the stats don't bear that out in any way at all. And here are the stats that you cannot dispute. In states that have raised the minimum wage above the federal level, those states have created jobs at a far faster rate than the states that have not. That is because when you raise the minimum wage, you put money into the pockets of people who will spend it, and it spurs the economy. Now, that might not be heard in your book, which purports to debunk lies, but those are the facts.
Well, if those are the facts, why stop at $7? We should pay everybody $20, $40 an hour, and then we'll really have
buying power. You're changing the subject. You're changing the subject because you know you're wrong.
And I now realize who you are because you, on my Amazon page, he came on and said I'm a smarmy-looking liar. But that one study was from Robert Reich's form, and it's been widely discredited by every serious economist.
Just look at the states. That's not a study. If you look at the states, the states that have raised their minimum wage higher than the federal level have created jobs faster than the states that haven't. That's a fact. That's not a study. That's a fact.
John Stossel, what about the argument? All right, this plays to your point of view. I'll let David rebut it. The argument by most economists, I just saw it on Greg Mankiw's website.
There's
Mankiw,
a citation.
A Harvard professor worked in the government, is that, okay, you can raise the wage for those who are going to be involved, but you are going to price out the lower-skilled workers who will try to get to the low end of the economic ladder, and or businesses are going to have to pay through the nose and be less profitable. Is that your basic point?
Yes, they won't give the kid an opportunity. Why let the kid work on a construction job and learn the job if you have to pay him this minimum wage? You're going to hire a more skilled worker.
David, I often wonder, there's such a small percentage of workers who are eligible for this thing. Why do you reckon it is such a small percentage if the results are so positive?
Well, because I think that people don't want to work for those kinds of low wages. The minimum wage is at a 50-year low, so there's a higher demand. But let me go back to your point here. The idea that low-wage workers are going to lose out on jobs. Let's just look at a case study, huh? Let's look at Oregon in 1998 that raised their minimum wage. What happened to their welfare recipients, those at the bottom end of the ladder? Their wages went up, and their job opportunities actually increased.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you, David Sirota. John Stossel, how's the book selling?
It's on the bestseller list.
Go figure.
So did you hear how that played out? Now, David Sirota will be joining us on this program here in the fairly immediate future. I've been in contact with him. He's just a wonderful writer and someone who can sort of pull the wings off the ugly little flies that are the Republican liars. But did you hear how that played out? Of course you did. We played it. That was rhetorical. But you let a goon like John Stossel come out and just spew garbage, just unmitigated, unsubstantiated, unrealistic garbage. And then you let the guy with some knowledge talk for a minute, and then you let the right-wing goon say, "I know you. You came on my page at Amazon." What a 5-year-old. What a 5-year-old John Stossel is. Because in this stupid little book of his, he puts out as one of those myths, you know, one of the lies they're telling you. They're telling you lies. One of the lies they're telling you is that people benefit from a raise on the minimum wage. Eat me, John Stossel. Because people do. But wait a minute. Wait just a confounded minute. I feel like I have to fulfill my role real quickly as a hardcore liberal. The current plan, as put forward by my party, is to raise the minimum wage to $7.25 over the next 2 years. And you heard David Sirota say, and it is true, that based upon inflation and buying power of the dollar, the minimum wage is at a 50-year low. In other words, if you're making minimum wage right now, you are making less actual money than if you were making minimum wage in 1956. So I have a question. And this works along the lines of what I think about, you know, that great line from Bobby Kennedy, who said, "Some people see things as they are and ask why, I see things as they should be and ask why not. So let us ask that question in regard to the minimum wage. Why does it take 2 years to raise the minimum wage to $7.25 when we know for a fact that every last little bit of data put out by the Chamber of Commerce and the Cato Institute and the American Enterprise Institute and the various and sundry right-wing, highly well-funded, multi-billionaire think tanks, every last piece of information that they put out is a damn lie, okay? It's just a filthy little lie. Oh, and we've heard him. We hear him every time. Oh, we cannot afford to raise the minimum wage, as that will cause the economy to collapse. This is time after time after time after time they've said this crap. And it never comes true, and nobody's ever there to say, oh, by the way, where's the economic collapse, you liars? Do you remember when Bill Clinton came into office with a plan to stimulate the economy and try to get us out of the god-awful deficit spending of 8 years of Ronnie Insane Reagan and George doesn't know what a barcode scanner is, H.W. Bush? You remember that? The Republicans in Congress said, Jesus Christ, he's trying to kill the economy. The economy will collapse. There'll be brokers on ledges and soup kitchens and stuff, and Oklahoma will turn to dust again. Gee, oh, help us. He's killing us all. He's going to destroy America. You remember that? I remember that. But we put through the Clinton economic reforms, and I'm not talking about NAFTA or any of that other hateful crap that he engaged in. I'm talking about the bare-bones minimum reforms in an attempt to get us out of the economic hole that 12 years of Republican occupancy of the White House had brought upon us. And the economic collapse didn't come. And when he left office, God, it feels like it should be only yesterday. When he left office in January of 2001, he handed George W. Bush a check. Which George W. Bush immediately, for all intents and purposes, took to the liquor store and cashed. But those free guys are going to destroy the economy. Where was my side? Oh, my God, where was my side to stand up and say, you freaks are doomsaying liars? And I appreciate the fact that Ted Kennedy is willing to stand up and say that... It's political blackmail to say the only way that minimum wage workers can get a raise is to give tax giveaways to the wealthiest Americans. I appreciate the fact that he's willing to stand up. But somebody, and I'll do it, I'm doing it, somebody's got to stand up and say these Republicans are a bunch of god-awful liars and point out the facts and call them on it. But finally, because I am the way I am, because I am a liberal, because I am a progressive, I got one question for my brother and sister Democrats in the Congress. If the minimum wage is at its lowest purchasing power in 50 years, at $5.15 an hour, brother and sister Democrats, why does it take 2 years to get it to 7.25? Why isn't it so? Why? Why? It should go from 5.15 to 7.25, and there shouldn't be, what? We need a cooling off period because the economy is going to have to contract a little bit to absorb $6.02 an hour? I call poppycock on this. I do. Well, we have to compromise, Bob. No. No. Poor people are Americans, too. And most of the poor in America are the working poor. And the working poor carry this nation on their backs. John Stossel. Well, why don't we just raise it to $20 an hour?
Could if we had unions.
Well, You know, well, you know, a kid will never get a job on a construction program if you raise the minimum wage. Yeah, he can. That's what the union apprenticeship programs are for, you freak. But you hate unions! Screw you, John Stossel, to the wall. Let's go to the phones. We're joined by our good friend Joe Vecchio. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. You know, at this point, I wish I were the working poor.
What do you mean?
As it is, I am the unemployed, impoverished.
Oh, God. I hate that for you. How are things going?
Oh, it's going. I'm here, and yeah, I'm getting kind of my chain kind of yanked by this company. I had two interviews with them, and I don't know what it is. I wrote a column about this on my blog. For those of you who don't know, that's cupojoe.blogspot.com. But it's like pulling teeth to get somebody to hire you these days. And I don't know what it is, and I don't know what the delay is. I'm obviously very overqualified for the job that I'm applying for. And to be perfectly honest, they're not going to get a better person for the type of salary they're offering. But I have an interview, and the guy says, you know, well, I got to talk to my boss about it. And I'll come back in 5 minutes. 5 minutes later, comes up, well, my boss didn't call back tomorrow, and tomorrow turns the next day, And, you know, in the meantime, I got no money, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, they're yanking my chain. And
it's cold comfort to tell you, Joe, that you're in the same boat with a whole lot of other Americans.
And, you know, the sad thing is that I am better off than a whole lot of other Americans because I see them on the street panhandling. Me, I panhandle on my website. At least I got some class, right? But, you know, it's funny because even though I'm poor, I still kind of dress nice, you know, when I go out looking for work. And people assume that when you dress nice, you have money.
Yeah.
So they're always coming up to you and asking for, you know, and I'm like, look, buddy, I'm 2 weeks away from where you are right now. Save a spot for me. I'll be joining you.
Yeah.
But, and you know, all this thing about minimum wage, very few people that I know actually make minimum wage. And I don't know what it is in Chicago. I know it varies from state to state, from city to city. In some cases, but realistically, you know, the living wage is still much, much higher than what the minimum wage is. The living wage is still probably $15-$20 an hour.
Oh, without a doubt. But, you know, we're not, if you start talking about a living wage, well, you know, you're a socialist.
Yeah, you can't have that.
You're a commie. You know, the next thing you know, you're going to want to move into Bill Gates' house or something.
And they're always trying to pull this trickle-down stuff on us, and it's just a lie, you know? Anybody out there who's listening who's ever worked pizza delivery, who's ever delivered to both rich people and poor people?
Oh, I know from the tipping.
And you know, right, exactly. You all know who tips the most. And the reason why the rich people are rich is because they get the money and they keep it. There's only one thing that trickles down or rolls downhill, as the case may be.
Yeah, and it's a word we don't say on the program. But
that's
yeah,
right.
Exactly.
So that's why I didn't say it.
Yeah, very good.
Even
see,
I.
You've been gone from the air for a little while, but you haven't lost your touch. You haven't lost your polish.
That's right. Even as angry as I get about all these things, I still manage to maintain my self control
and so a certain level of decorous language. Absolutely, you and I can do this for hours upon end and never say the word that it only took George Bush 15 seconds and one half stuffed roll in his mouth to say.
And this guy makes all this money. That's what gets me. I mean, look, you know, I don't ask for a lot out of life, and I know a lot of other people who are in the same boat. We don't ask for a lot out of life. There are a lot of us even who realize that even if we did have $1 million or so, we couldn't handle it because that's a lot of responsibility having that kind of money. We're perfectly happy going to our jobs, doing our business, you know, going home and watching a little TV or going out to eat once in a while. You know, we don't need to have huge ambitions to have an enjoyable life.
Yeah, what W.C. Fields referred to as a river of beer flowing over your grandmother's paisley shawl.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, and you know, we don't need anything more than that. And yet, the people in charge are never satisfied with what they have. And, you know, that's you know, the historical thing I talked about, ancient Athens, the French nobility. You know, the French nobility was doing the stuff they were doing for centuries before they got overthrown. And what was the thing that threw them over the edge was the price of bread.
Yeah.
And now...
Well, okay, you know, how about a modern comparison or a modern analogy? Kellogg's just announced that breakfast cereal is going up
3%. Yeah. And the price of bread in itself here has gone up fairly much, too. I mean, it's over a dollar a loaf now. Even I remember when it was like a quarter a loaf.
Oh, sure.
Everything going up against except the salaries. You know, the way they talk about inflation, and, you know, that's the thing that's always, the only thing they don't want to inflate is working people's salaries.
Well, that's the thing. You know, we talk about inflation, but we do not talk about the real killer here, and that is wage stagnation.
Mm-hmm.
And we are in the middle of significant wage stagnation.
And, you know, the thing is, my dad made, I think, about $6.50 an hour in 1968. And on that one salary, he could support a family of five. Okay? Because, yeah, you know, granted, it doesn't sound like a lot of money, but what was a loaf of bread in 68? You know, 10 cents, 15 cents?
Yeah.
A gallon of gas was like, I think, 29, 39 cents.
Yeah.
Rent, I don't think we paid more than $80 a month of rent back then.
Yeah, at the earliest level of my consciousness, which would probably be around 1966 or so, I remember gas at 30 cents a gallon.
Yeah. And really, you know, rent is the biggest thing. Rent is the biggest killer because that's gone up exponentially, especially over the last 20, 25 years. And that's really gone through the roof. People are paying a lot more now for even the barest housing than they were. And now if you live, you know, and of course it's cheaper if you live out in the suburbs, but now if you live in the suburbs, you have to have a car to get everywhere. And guess what? Gas is over $3 a gallon. It's, what, $3.70 here that I've noticed here in Chicago.
Gee whiz.
And that's regular. That's, you know, and you know, people can't deal with that all the time. And you don't, you know, and nobody wants to do anything, you know, in the right areas about public transportation. And we go round and round in circles about the whole thing. But it's obvious, you know, that both Democrats and Republicans voted for their own pay raise. And then the Republicans turned around and said, screw you to the American worker.
Right.
And now they're
scared to death that they're going to get soundbited leading up to the November elections. And frankly, they deserve it.
They deserve a lot worse than what they're going to get. But the truth of the matter is, I still don't see much hope. But we'll see. We'll see. Because I think there's a lot of really, really angry people out there. And there's a lot of people out there who really want to see change. But the problem is, not voting Republican doesn't necessarily translating into voting Democratic, but we'll see what happens. And, you know, the thing about it is that the pay raise that they gave themselves, just the pay raise itself, was more than the minimum wage has increased, I think, in 25 years or something like that.
Yeah.
Just that one pay raise.
Well, this is a nation that does not care, and you're not going to, I won't throw you with this reference. This is a nation that does not care for its helots. The Spartan slaves, remember them, Joe?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Spartan elite was children, you know, so forth, were encouraged to periodically just go out and beat the snot out of the helots, who literally kept them alive.
Yeah, and that's why the Spartans sometimes couldn't go on long military campaigns, is because they had to worry constantly about revolts at home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and when you don't, you know, and that's the same thing that happens with the Athenians. I mean, a bunch of rich people took over and they decided, screw the poor. That's what happened with the Romans. You know, when Rome began to get much more powerful and much more rich, then there was a huge struggle at the top to control all of that. And that's what we're seeing in this country. I mean, America has had its problems before. You know, we had presidents that were assassinated, and we've had good times and bad times, but the really, really nasty stuff really hasn't occurred until we got really, really rich. And people wanted a piece of that pie. It started in the Industrial Revolution, and now, you know, with us being the world's military superpower, all that military capital, so to speak, they feel like they need to expend. You know, Bush talks about political capital that he had, that he wasted away. And, you know, what we've got is military capital that some people feel like we've got to use. You know? That's how Rome made its money, military capital. Man, they would, you know, they needed some money. They'd conquer a few people and, you know, send in tribute. That's exactly it. And now I think we're feeling the need to do the same thing.
Yeah, well, it's an empire mentality, and it shows a profound lack of creative vision in terms of you know, keeping the lights on at home.
Well, when you have short-sighted people in office, I mean the Republicans and the business people who back them, as far as they're concerned, the world ends when they die.
Mm-hmm.
So as far, you know, anything they do, it doesn't really matter to them because the consequences of what they do are not going to be felt in their lifetime, so they really don't care. Whereas liberals, especially New Deal liberals of the 30s and 40s, they wanted to build something that would outlast them. Because when they put Social Security, a lot of the people that put it together weren't ever going to see Social Security.
Right.
But they knew that it was going to be a good bulwark in the future for older people who were poor.
Well, it may. That's a beautiful way, Joe, of pointing out the difference between the two.
Well, you know, it's short term. You know, that's one of many things, but.
Well, it's what you get, and it's what I was talking about with Andy earlier in the program. The president, for good or ill, sets the tone for the nation. And this is a guy who, when he, you know, what's history going to say about him? I don't know. We'll all be dead.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that creates a sort of an ant versus the grasshopper sort of a mentality. And right now we're in an ugly little grasshopper phase. Joe, we've run out of time. We got to do the top of the hour. Keep in touch, okay?
I will keep in touch. And listen, as soon as we get this internet connection settled here, because we have an internet thing going on, we've got the modem fried. As soon as that happens, I'll get right back on the air.
All right, sounds good.
I'm all set up otherwise.
Okay, great. You take care, Joe.
Take care, Bob.
Good luck with the job.
Thanks a lot.
Bye now.
Bye.
And to the news. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Screen door slams, Mary's dress waves. Like a vision, she dances across the porch as the radio plays. Roy Orbison singing for the lonely. Hey, that's me, and I want you only. Don't turn me home again, I just can't face myself alone again. Don't run back inside, darling. What I'm here for. So you're scared and you're thinking that maybe we ain't that young anymore. Show a little faith, there's magic in the night. You ain't a beauty, but hey, you're alright. Oh, and that's alright. You can hide your colors and study your pain. Cross lovers.
For Quality News
This is the Quality News Network. In a press conference today at the White House, President Bush and British Prime Minister Tony Blair announced support for a multinational military force in the Israel-Lebanon area. Both rejected calls for an immediate ceasefire favored by most European and Arab countries. Israeli air and artillery attacks continue to strike southern Lebanon. As many as a dozen Lebanese civilians and 26 Hezbollah rebels were killed. Hezbollah said it fired a new long-range missile which hit southeast of Haifa. At least 13 Israelis were wounded. The combined civilian and military Israeli death toll in the last 17 days is 51. The death toll in Lebanon is estimated at between 460 and 600. Following 3 days of Israeli shelling and the death of four unarmed peacekeepers, the UN is closing down its observer post on the Israeli-Lebanon border. Israel has apologized and says the missile attacks were accidental. The Bush administration announced a $4.6 billion arms deal to Arab states the White House designates as moderate. Saudi Arabia alone will receive nearly $3 billion worth of weaponry, including battle tanks and Apache helicopters. The five permanent members of the U.N. Security Council announced a resolution giving Iran until the end of August to suspend uranium enrichment. Economic and diplomatic sanctions are threatened. Also at the U.N. today, the world body told America to shut down its secret detention facilities. The U.N. is demanding the U.S. permit the International Red Cross access to those prisoners. Congress has agreed to vote on whether to increase the minimum wage. The $2.10 hourly increase would be approved only if estate taxes, mostly associated with the wealthiest taxpayers, are eliminated or reduced. The UN Human Rights Committee today said the U.S. should allow the District of Columbia to elect a voting member of Congress. The committee says the lack of such representation violates international law. In California, the death toll from the 13-day heat wave there is now 132 people, as well as 25,000 cattle and 700,000 fowl. In northeast Iowa, Nearly 10 inches of rain flooded river streets and towns. At least 600 residents have been rescued. A New Zealand study released today says Vietnam War veterans suffered genetic damage from exposure to Agent Orange. The scientific report bolsters proposed lawsuits against chemical companies and the U.S. government. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Second quarter economic growth slowed in the U.S. to a 2.5% rate. Inflation increased as consumer spending and home construction decreased. Chevron enjoyed record second quarter profits. The oil company cited earnings of $4.35 billion. Quest's former CFO will serve 6 months home detention and 2 years probation following conviction of insider trading during the company's multi-billion dollar accounting scandal. A New York federal appeals court today upheld the 25-year prison sentence of WorldCom's former CEO. Analysts say Americans can expect to see continued increased airfares. Domestic airlines are posting higher profits for the first time in 5 years. Like sweet crude settled at $73.26 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange, gold finished trading at $646.90 an ounce. At the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow was up 119 points at 11,219. The Nasdaq was up 40 at 2,094. The S&P 500 was up 15 at 1,278. Office Depot saw second quarter earnings increase 18% and release of Microsoft's new operating system Vista has been delayed again. You can find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now.
1-877.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful. Your Excellency, the Speaker of the House.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Was that first pass through the opener assigned? We get tonight's second hour, and, you know, then the Muslim religious mumbo-jumbo starts.
I didn't do that.
You did that, Agnes?
I didn't.
No, we're reality-based. There are no miracles here.
That was not a miracle. That was a Hal glitch.
No, there are no demons in your production, PC.
No.
Out, vile demon. Get out. Out, I cast thee into the herd of swine in the backyard. Yay, get out.
Now, see, he's the one that's always talking about demons. It's Hal. It's my computer.
I'm sorry, Agnes, I can't do that.
Yes, we have this love-hate relationship going for us. And Hal spits at me every once in a while, and that was one of Hal's spits.
Yeah, and the best part of it, since we're going to work with the 2001 metaphor, is, you know, when Agnes has the big long bone in her hand and she's hopping up and down next to Hal, going, woo, woo, woo. Yeah. You know, when we were talking with David earlier, he lost the charge on his telephone. David, did you get it recharged?
Yeah, I got it recharged. I don't know how long it lasts.
You put it on the Gilligan's Island bicycle and pedaled it for a little while, or?
No, I put it back on my Radio Shack charger.
Oh, you're doomed.
I know, I'm doomed. It's Radio Shack, where they ask your phone number for buying some batteries.
Right.
I actually asked them why they do that. They didn't have an answer. They just looked at me like dumbfounded, like, why would you ask that? We had to kill you.
I give the number for the Chinese carry-out restaurant. It seems right. To work well for me.
Right. That's good. So what I was saying was I was about to get to the sixth point, but before I do that, I think it's important for people to realize, well, why is it that
they're Well, wait, David. Let's recap.
Oh, okay.
What are the points you're just in case anybody joined in late? What are the points you're working from?
Right.
No, what are the points you are working from?
Oh, I'm working on the point of selling us a dream or selling us a dream that isn't true, basically. What I call a dream merchant. Basically someone on basically if you want to look at it like a hustler, someone on the street who wants to hustle you something because that's their profession, that's what they do, and that's what they do to basically make a living.
Okay, and you've been reading from a...
I've been reading from a letter by Richard Lamb, who I don't know... See, this is interesting. I don't know who put this out there because it was 2 years ago. So you have to think about it and you'll be, why is someone putting out... This is a trial balloon, an artillery shell test, just to see how people will react. And I don't think it's a coincidence that they're putting out a former Democrat governor and his speech on what he thinks about how to destroy, I have a plan to destroy America. I don't think that's a coincidence at all. And at the bottom, it's even interesting because I'm reading off WorldNet Daily. I know I have to wash my hands with lava soap afterwards. But.
Oh, yeah, and dip your brain in gasoline or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, at the end they have a Noam Chomsky quote. I kid you not. So it's like, what are they trying to do? And I realize what they're trying to do. People, the Republican shtick is.
Can you shoot? No, I don't mean to interrupt, but could you shoot me a link to this thing when you're done?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Basically, what happened is I believe that the Republican shtick is running so thin that they have to get Democrats and liberals and use quotes for their agenda. So not to look like they're completely just one-sided. They're like, oh, look what the liberals said. And another thing that people should keep in mind is this. Keep in mind, people, this is about the hustle. And when I say it's about the hustle, I mean this. They want you to be around. Because guess what? If we're not around, all those Republican pundits and media hacks, they're hitting the skids, people. They got nothing to talk about. Nothing. So they're depending on our emotional reaction. They're depending on what we do next for them to continue to make their hustle.
Sure.
And this goes into...
Yeah, because, I mean, if you sent Kira Phillips home and said, honey, you're going to have to do, you know, the woman who gave 9 minutes to Tim, the Jenkins guy, Jerry Jenkins, to talk about the coming apocalypse on CNN. If you told her that she had to actually go out and earn a living, she'd be on Skid Row in a week. Because she can't do anything.
Something I learned about the ultimate hustlers. I learned this from a friend in New York. He was telling me how bad New York is, and you're gonna find this to be an eye opener, Bob. In New York, the barbershop, you're not gonna be when you walk through the barbershop, it's like going through a one stop retail shop. And what I mean is they sell DVDs. I'm not kidding you. You walk in a barbershop in Harlem, they're selling DVDs. They're selling cologne. They are selling sneakers. They are selling apparel, and they're selling the newest mixtapes, bootleg movies. You name it, and they have it there. Now you ask yourself, okay, why are these barbers doing that? Because people, it's about the hustle, and the economy has gone to crap, and they have to do it to provide for their family, and that's the only way that barbers can do it. There's a reality check for you. That's what all the barbers in New York do.
Well, when you see economic hard times coming onto a culture or onto a society, David, you see that so-called illegal activity go up as a direct result of people like the RIAA and the MPAA,
right?
Trying to create monopolies. When hard times come, people do more questionable things in order to keep the lights on and keep the room warm in the winter and keep the kids fed.
And another way hustlers, this is a comparison to Republican. Another way hustlers keep their generate more income on the streets now is they spark drama. They spark melodrama. They spark an adversary that's, it's like a competition. It's like a fight all of a sudden. It's a cage match. It's wrestling. It's everything. And that's what they do in DVD magazines in particular for hip-hop. There's a thing, I don't think people know this, but DVD magazines on the streets, you can become a millionaire in 2 years. That's a fact if you do this right. That's the kind of money people are making at making and putting something out like that. But what you have to do is you have to create this kind of drama and this kind of tension and make it look like it's interesting and make it look like it's something worthy to watch. And it's the same way that the Republicans do. They have to make these op-ed pieces, these articles, these commentaries, these shows, they have to make them look so dramatic. Like,
well, I think I hate to give her the publicity. I haven't mentioned it, but a perfect case in point for what you're talking about is Anthrax Coulter coming out just the other day screaming that Bill Clinton is a latent homosexual.
Did you hear what she said on Hardball?
What?
She said Al Gore is a fag. I'm not parsing words, people. Those are the exact words she said.
Well,
Al
see,
Gore is a fag.
In a way, outrage is a little, you know, being outrageous is a little bit like heroin.
That's right. And that's her hustle. That's what she has to do to survive. That's what she has to do to generate
but she
that
keeps,
income.
But she keeps having to top herself. She
right.
keeps having to be a little bit more outrageous. Why this woman is not behind bars when she confessed that she mailed an envelope full of fake anthrax to the New York Times, I don't know.
I don't know, but see...
She's lost her mind.
Clearly she's lost something. Or, she, you know what, it could be that she's a liberal in denial.
No. I'm not. No, she doesn't get to come into the big tent. No, no.
Okay. You never know. Someone who, she's a self-hating liberal. I don't know.
Ew.
I know, that's kind of scary.
Okay,
so...
Oh, that was a body shiver, David.
Give a guy
a little warning, okay?
I did that on purpose. I'm sorry.
Okay, so with all this, as with past as prologue, point six.
Right, point six. Now we get into more craziness. I would establish dual citizenship and promote divided loyalties. I would celebrate diversity. Diversity is a wonderfully seductive word. It stresses differences rather than commonalities. Diverse people worldwide are mostly engaged in hating each other. That is, when they are not killing each other. A diverse, peaceful, or stable society is against most historic precedent. People undervalue the unity it takes to keep a nation together, and we can take advantage of this myopia. All right. This right here is an example of, again, taking what diversity means and twisting the meaning the ringer.
I think you're losing your battery again, David.
I know.
No, but I understand. Take a perfectly good idea and try to turn it into something perverse and sick.
Yeah. Basically, I'm gonna probably end up sending you this because my battery's probably going to go again.
Okay, but I would like to read it all the way through.
Yeah, and I'll probably finish it up. And before I go, though, before my phone dies, and I know the beeping is incessant, I'd just like to mention the people on C-SPAN is an important show. It's the 9/11, the neocon agenda with Sybil Edmonds. It's on at 8 o'clock Saturday.
Night?
At night.
Okay, 8 o'clock Eastern, Saturday evening, Sybil Edmonds on C-SPAN.
Right, and I'll pick up where I left off from Monday.
Okay, sounds good, David. Take
care. All
right, later. Bye now. David makes a lot of good points. There is a hustle. And you know, there's an outrage machine. Sure, I carry on. We have fun on this program. You know, but I don't think that I've ever advocated poisoning George Bush or Tony Scalia or Tom DeLay or Boehner or Frist or any of the goons. Because I know what would happen to me if I did. And see, a liberal doesn't get to cover it up by saying, just kidding. But there is a problem with making yourself solely a merchant of outrage. And that is, you keep having to top yourself. There's an old Warner Brothers cartoon where Daffy Duck, I'm sorry, by now we know what my childhood was spent doing, absorbing Warner Brothers cartoons. But, you know, he's all constantly one-upped by Bugs Bunny. And finally he says, okay, watch this. And he says, first, I will drink a gallon of gasoline. And he drinks gasoline, and he eats TNT, and he does all this, and he says, and now I light a match. Boom. And he, you know, blows up. And Bugs, oh, that's great, Daffy. That's great. I love that. And Daffy, floating up to heaven or down in hell, I forget which, says, yeah, it's a great thing, but there's only one problem. You can only do it once. And that's, you know, that's where the Republicans find themselves. They have had all four cloven hooves in the trough for 12 years now in the Congress. And they have howled outrage after outrage. And they've gotten they've utterly perverted the religious process in this country. And they have made an absolute, oh my God, fortune on fake outrage. I met a young woman this morning at a convenience store. I went in for a cup of decaf, and she was starting off to apparently not the best of days, and you know, talking about the price of gasoline, that kind of thing. And, you know, the price of a loaf of bread and, you know, how you pay your bills and stuff. And I looked at her and said, yeah, but at least the queers can't get married. She goes, hey, I'm gay. I said, yeah, well, you know, good. And she understood then. And she laughed and she said, yeah, because, you know, me, little me, I'm the biggest threat to national security this nation has. And in the middle of nowhere, West Virginia, I made a new friend. And I find out that this is the real America. This young woman is gay. She has family obligations. She came home from where she was. She's fabulously well educated. And she's working the morning shift at a convenience store because her family, her aging grandparents need her. And she's in a stable, loving, healthy relationship with another woman. And I walked away from that little meeting, you know, and I felt good because every now and then you get a chance to meet the people that really make up America. If you'll bother to stop and talk. And I love to stop and talk. And it makes a little sick place in my gut to know that no matter how hard she works, that she is not welcome in Bushmerica. No matter what she does, she is not welcome in Bushmerica. What did you say, Agnes? No, that's not my America. It's not your America. That's Bushmerica, where the religion industry is co-opted by huge business, where Michael Scanlon, associate of Jack Abramoff, says under oath in front of the Congress, well, the way we worked it was Jack would tell me what it was we wanted to do, and I would send an email to Ralph Reed, and he would get the Christian wackos all up in arms, and we would stop whatever it is we needed to be stopped, and they would never even know what it was they were complaining about. You know, that's the people who are on the side of the so-called Christian wackos talking about that. How much of that? How much? How much press did that get from the New York Times, the Washington Post? Maybe a mention in one story. How much follow up? How many times did it air on CNN? Did it air on MSNBC? Did it air on CNBC, ABC, NBC, CBS? God knows it didn't air on Fox. But is outrage a little bit like meth? It'll literally eat you alive after a while. Have the Republicans finally been consumed by their outrage when they get to the point where they're engaging in overt criminal activity? Ann Coulter mailing white powder to the New York Times. Engaged in vote fraud schemes in Florida. Flush Flimball getting busted on a trip to the Dominican Republic for some little boy sex. I don't know. I mean, where's the tipping point for America? You and me, we passed it a long time ago. If I sit here and I lose my cool on the air, I'm generally doing it because there is something truly, truly horrible in the world. I'm not standing here. I'm not going to scream about Ann Coulter. You know, I mean, who the hell is she to question the sexuality of Al Gore or Bill Clinton or anybody else on planet Earth? The only time you'll hear something like that on this program is if we are actively engaged in pointing out hypocrisy. You know, Ann Coulter has a bigger Adam's apple than I do. I don't care. I want people to be who they are. I got a story from, Wednesday night stack about some right-wing, it was part of the American Family Association, having a hissy because now on some check-off forms for gender at Harvard, you can check male, female, or transgendered. And if you read the stuff at the American Family Association, you would absolutely, you would think that it was the end of Western civilization. I mean, look, I'm sitting here doing the show, my wife's sitting there producing, I'm wearing pants, she's wearing pants, I'm wearing a shirt, she's wearing a shirt. Periodically, the entire nation of Scotland puts on a skirt, men and women alike, and calls it a kilt, and it's okay. But, you know, the it's Christian persecution to let somebody mark off the fact that their gender's in question. Jesus Christ. Does it weary you? Do you grow tired of it? Let's take a break and then come back to the telephones. The phone number, of course, you know, 877-443-2366. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Becoming clear. It's stop. It's gonna take a revolution of the heart.
There's a place on the web you can go where everything is so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there working hard for you every day. It's a place where you can go to raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. D-U-B-Y-A-D-40.com. So stop on by. The 101st Fighting Keyboardists of Kansas are ready to hear your opinion. There are topics of news, current events, and great humor. So let Clyde, Wally, and Dookie know that you're a working person too. WD40.com. Stop on by.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
It was one against, I don't know, probably 10. By the time they were done, his neck was red.
Oh, I am afraid to go to high school.
It scares me.
I have a knife and you don't. Ha, 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 ha.
There was this kid that was like 17, or he came to a school with a gun.
We didn't know if it was fake or real.
Our children need our help to deal with tough issues, like violence. Please, talk with your kids.
For a free booklet, call 1-800-CHILD-44. Brought to you by the Kaiser Family Foundation, Children Now, and the Ad Council.
In Kosovo, the U.S. government has provided over 292 million ounces, a $70 million U.S. government assistance package for Central America in response to Hurricane Mitch.
Sometimes it seems like we spend an awful lot of our tax money helping people in other countries. But in reality, it's less than 1% of our government's annual budget. Our aid programs save lives by helping couples plan their families, immunizing children against deadly diseases, and ensuring that people have safe drinking water. It's important that these programs continue. Helping create a healthy and secure future for people in developing countries helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. Senators and Representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121. This message brought to you by Population Action International.
Seven minutes before the hour, as my weekend works its way toward me. 2 days of silence for me. Scary stuff. Poor Agnes. Let's go to the phones. Wayne is with us. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the program. How you doing?
Good, buddy. How you doing?
I'm okay.
Good. I was glad to hear that clip with David Sirota.
Yeah.
He's, well...
smart guy.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely one of my heroes. And, you know, it's so important that we start to dispel these myths. And it's a very hard thing to do because these people are, you know, facts don't mean anything. I mean, facts are to be ignored.
Well, you know, I mean, there are a million questions that rise out of this, Wayne. If, for instance, if John Stossel is right and only 3% of the people make minimum wage, why are we satisfied as a nation to pay 3% of the people that paltry amount of money?
Well, exactly, and if that is right, you know, you have to keep in mind, too, that the minimum wage is $5.15 an hour.
Yeah.
If you make $5.20 an hour, you're above the minimum wage, therefore you don't count.
Yeah, five and a quarter, five and a half,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, right, whatever. You know, anything over 515 is not minimum wage. But, you know, there's it's a similar bunch of crap with the, you know, I mean, what do you hear all the time from the right wing? You know, well, the reason gas prices are so high is because we haven't built a new refinery in this country for 30 years.
Yeah.
That's true. A new from scratch refinery.
Yeah, but the other ones, the ones that already exist.
And have been expanded. We have increased every year in the last 10 years in this country, we have increased refining capacity by 177,000 gallons per day. That by, you know, adding to existing refineries. That, you know, translates to building a brand new, larger than normal refinery every year for the last 10 years. And, you know, before Senate committees on price gouging, the, you know, CEOs of BP, Enron, and everybody else has admitted that right now the market might be a little tight. But by 2010, because of adding on to refineries, the capacity will increase somewhere between 1.4 and 2 million gallons a day.
But that's not going to mean any $2 a gallon gas.
No, it is not. And they don't foresee needing any new refineries until at least 2030. But, you know, what do you hear every day? Well, the reason we can't build any refineries is because the environmentalists won't let us. The fact of the matter is, additions to existing plants, generally, as a rule, have their permits within 6 months and at the most 1 year. Now, you know, that's pretty quick.
Yeah, but see,
you know, for any kind of building,
especially
to get permits.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is, you're running around in the factual world, and that doesn't work for the Ripigs, Wayne.
No, it doesn't. You could show them the facts, and they deny them.
I mean, that clip with Stossel and Sirota, you know, instead of trying to refute, and it was irrefutable what Sirota said, Stossel went immediately, oh, you're the guy that called me an ugly name on my Amazon page.
Right, exactly. Let's switch the subject and start. You know, exactly.
Bunch of babies.
You're right. And, you know, Sirota answered that correctly. You are.
Fact-based. Fact-based again.
Yeah, that's another fact. I mean, you know, the facts are the facts. But who was it, Reagan?
Facts are stupid things?
Facts are stupid things, yeah. You know, so, I mean, that's the people you're up against. And I don't know what happened to this minimum wage bill. I know they were tacking, you know, I know one of the things they were tacking on it was a completely erased estate tax.
Right, the Paris Hilton tax went bye-bye.
Yeah, you know, forever. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, there was probably a provision in, you know, we'll raise the minimum wage, but you have to turn over your firstborn or...
Well, there was an insurance scam built into this thing, Wayne.
And what was that?
It was highly touted by, you know, the usual suspects, Competitive Enterprise, American Enterprise, Cato Institute, you know, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, all those.
It was going to allow, the point of it was to allow small business owners to band together to form healthcare cooperatives. Sounds good on its face, right?
Oh, yeah.
But built into that was a deregulation scheme that would have allowed these so-called insurance cooperatives to deny basic healthcare coverage, to provide less substandard prescription coverage, to, you know, not cover things that you would ordinarily expect to be covered, you know, tell a woman to go to hell if she wanted to, have contraception covered, you know, the usual crap.
Right.
But, you know, they say, well, you know, we're helping the small business owner. No, you're not helping. No, because, you know, the small business owner is still going to pay. But you know what? The worker that gets sick and can't get coverage on that scam program hurts the small business owner.
Right. In other words, we'll agree to give you a $2.10 an hour raise as long as you agree to pay us back $5 an hour.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Well,
it's all a con. It's These people, I don't know if it's in, I don't know if it's genetic, but they, the Republican Party cannot put forward a piece of legislation that doesn't have at least, you know, I mean, it's like when you go buy sausage at the grocery store, you know, the stuff that's really cheap. Oh, a dollar a roll for a pound. And you look and you find out it's 92% fat. That means that's going to be grease in the skillet when the sausage is fried. You know, 92% of any Republican piece of legislation is going to be fraud.
Well, yeah, and a pound isn't even a pound anymore, is it? Isn't a pound of coffee 14 ounces or something?
Lord knows a half a gallon of ice cream is 54 ounces now.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I don't know. I'm really looking forward to the David Sirota interview.
I hope to get that scheduled up on Monday.
The guy is really, well, he's amazing. And, you know, I never realized till reading some of his things, and I wonder, you know, if I ever bumped into him in Vermont. He used to work for Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just can't say enough nice, you know. We can use a lot more David Sirota.
Yeah, he gets it. He gets it.
Huh?
He gets it.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Yeah, that's like the comment by John Stossel about, well, you know, no. And, you know, I thought of you when I heard it because, you know, oh, no kid will ever get a chance to learn the construction trades if we raise the minimum wage. Did you hear that?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. You know, I'm president of the Carpenters Local here.
Yeah.
Do you know what a union apprentice, first-year carpenter's apprentice would start out today?
I'm guessing 10, 12 bucks an hour.
$12 an hour, plus full health insurance, plus $7 an hour in his pension. That's a little bit better than minimum wage.
Right.
And, you know.
So, once again, what, you know, Stossel puts forward is, now if he's worked, you know, if this kid's trying to work a non-union construction job, I'm sure they'll be more, you know, they'd be more than happy to pay him $4.25 an hour.
Oh, yes, they would. Yes, they would.
And, you know, maybe ruin his back before he's 21 years old.
Listen, we have a lot of not kids that are non-union carpenters that are working for $7 an hour.
Yeah.
You know, and, well.
Because it's good for the economy.
Right, yeah, it's good.
Right.
You know, how do you, well, and then with gas prices today, and, you know, at $7 an hour, how do, you know, construction jobs, you travel. They don't build everything next to your house.
No.
You know, so, and, you know, here in West Virginia, and, I would say most of the country, if you have a construction job and your drive is only an hour to that job, you're home, buddy. I mean, man, that's a good one, you know, because you're close to home. It costs a lot of money to drive that far.
Oh, sure it does. So, and if it's 2.5 hours away, you're probably still driving home at night.
Well, then you have to weigh, is it cheaper to get a motel room for the week and be away from your wife and children, or is it, you know?
Yeah.
Or put gas in the car, and then, you know, then your 8-hour day involves, 12 hours because you got 2.5 driving each way. 13 hours, I guess that would come to. But
I'm imagining you've put a few of those miles on the vehicle.
Oh, yeah, I have. Yes, I have. You know, but, I mean, that's part of the gig. That's something that you accept if that's what you choose to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did choose to do. And I was fortunate. I think the greatest thing for a working person is to absolutely enjoy what they do. And, you know, I was always lucky enough to have that. You know, I didn't wake up every morning at 4:30 or 5 o'clock and go, oh my God, I got to go to work today. I looked forward to it because I love building things. It's a rewarding thing, you know.
You start with nothing and you end up with something.
Well, at the end of the day, you turn around and look back where you worked and it didn't look like that when you got there in the morning, you know, and that's, well, I don't know. For goofy people like me, that's rewarding.
I don't think it's goofy at all, man. But,
so.
But you know, being able to have it, see a tangible result. You know, I don't. You know, there are a lot of people out there whose jobs I would not in any wise do, and that's not because I'm lazy. But I gotta, I got to feel like what I'm doing matters. And when you leave at the end of the day and you can see that you're doing something that does that has mattered, and you've made a material increase, or you know, you somehow, you know, you got something to show for it.
Right. And you can't take that hearse or that U-Haul with you when you go.
No.
But, you know, you can take a feeling that I tried to make a difference, and hopefully I did. That's a very good feeling.
Yeah, it is.
That's a very good feeling. You know. But listen, buddy, I know you probably got callers lined up, and I'm going to let you go.
All right. Well, I will be announcing when we get David Sirota's interview lined up. I look forward to the conversation. I really do.
Yeah, I think that'll be exciting.
All right, you take it easy.
Guy.
Have a great Hey, looking forward to the party, man.
Okay, man, I am too.
All right, see ya.
All right, brother, bye.
Bye now. Party at Wayne's. Sunday. Democratic reunion picnic. Let's keep moving to the phones. Luke is with us. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Evening, Bob.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm all right. I'm just curious, and all this stuff you were talking about with Stossel, did he mention all those contracts he has with all those corporations?
No. Those are what Al Gore might call an inconvenient truth.
Okay. I'm always amazed whenever I see him on the air that no one ever mentions the fact that he has contracts with like a half a dozen different corporations.
That rule doesn't apply to them, though. It's like, I can't remember the guy's name, but this one right-wing blogger who's very prominent has not disclosed and been blogging along and talking about John McCain as if John McCain was the second coming of Jesus. Well, it turns out he's being paid to do that.
By John McCain?
Yeah, by John McCain.
Imagine that. Oh, one question. I saw one something I had not heard asked all week on anything. I'm just curious about this. Your leader signed the Voting Rights Act renewal.
Yeah.
Did he sign a signing statement with it?
I was wondering about that myself. I can only imagine what it would look like.
You know,
this voting rights. Yeah, yeah. This voting rights. This is my signing statement for the Voting Rights Act. It shall not apply to people less white than me.
What was the? I'm trying to think where it was. Maybe it was on your show. I'm sorry. I apologize. I've heard this someplace. My mind just totally went Swiss cheese on me. Did I hear the fact that Cindy Sheehan has bought a piece of property in Crawford?
You heard that last night. Yes. Not just any piece of property. She bought the piece of property next door to the Prairie Chapel Ranch.
Oh.
She's Dear Leader's neighbor now.
Well, that means the lease will not be renewed, I assume.
I assume. Oh. Ben said last night, he's the white flight's already taken place.
It's like that's one of the things, you know, I told you this one time before, I think. It's sort of like the thing we had back here years ago with Fred Thompson. Fred Thompson would come back to the state when it was time for an election, and he had his campaign manager would go down in Chattanooga and rent a red pickup truck.
Oh yeah,
and then he'd drive all around. They'd go around on all these things. He'd pull up or something in the red pickup truck, and somebody got to look at one day and found out that, oh, by the way, he just leases this while he's in town.
Yeah, you know, I drive through Lawrenceburg, Tennessee when I come north after visiting in Alabama. And talk about one to make you scream. At the Lawrenceburg, Tennessee city limits, there's a sign that says, "Welcome to Lawrenceburg, birthplace of Davy Crockett and Fred Thompson."
Can we put one? Please tell me one's on one side of the sign and one's on the other.
That's Davy Crockett and Fred Thompson. Yeah, same board, same. You know, they're the same character of human being.
Oh, I tell you what. Well, but like I say, most people, you know, you'll never hear them mention it in the when they're talking about Crawford is the fact that this is a show ranch. I mean, there's no horses. I don't think there's any cattle. I mean, this
no, there's cattle, Luke. There's cattle because Dear Leader said he talks to them.
But like I say, it's one where probably the neighbor is actually the neighbor's cattle. They probably just drive them over.
and he's standing there, standing there looking across the barbed wire, going, "Moo, y'all." Moo.
And the cattle are probably looking at each other going, "Ooh."
Yeah, it's like
how far the humans have fallen.
Yeah. I got an interesting story out of sort of your neck of the woods.
Which one?
Came out of the Washington Post yesterday, the Dateline Johnson City.
Oh.
This is just one of those sleep tight tonight America stories, Luke. Turns out the Army has gotten rid of another Arab linguist.
Oh, God.
The guy, I assume a guy. Can't tell from the name. Blue Copus. Yeah, he.
Okay.
Blue Copus, 30 years old, canned as an Arab linguist from the 82nd Airborne at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, for being gay.
How dare he?
Oh, I know. Well, the best part of it is he was canned because an email smear campaign was sent around the base.
Oh gosh.
You know, it's so embarrassing.
I still to this day still, you know, and you've heard this before too. I still want the old stories about Rush to come out. You know, when he was in his previous life before he became Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, you mean as Steve Christie?
Yes. And it's amazing how now nobody ever looks at Mr. Christie and finds out all those things that the reason that Mr. Christie had to leave a job.
Yeah, the reason he wound up selling hot dogs for the Kansas City Royals after that. Oh yeah.
But it's amazing how all these people are like, oh yeah. And if you bring that up, it's like, no, that never happened. You know, it's like. Well, shoot, forget that evidence. That evidence don't mean anything.
My friends, that's a function of the liberal media. Yeah.
You know, it's like I always said, the one that always got me years ago was Redbeard the Pirate, Mr. Brent Bozell.
I saw something from L. Brent Bozell, yeah.
Well, do you remember years ago, L. Brent got real testy for a long while because his partner, his business partner, I should say, let's put it that way.
His longtime companion, yin.
Was died of AIDS. I'm very sorry for the gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like all of a sudden he was essentially, that's how he was outed.
Well, yeah, he's all ticked off, L. Brent Bozell is.
What right now is he ticked off about?
He's published an open letter to Rob Owen, who is president of the Television Critics Association. Now remember, L. Brent Bozell III is the person who gets all these little fundies to write all these letters to the FCC complaining about nipples of death and things like that.
Oh, yeah. When there's 100,000 letters, and my golly, they're all AstroTurf.
Yeah, and no one ever saw it, you know? Yeah. I mean, right. He's written a letter to the president of the Television Critics Association, Luke, because two-thirds of the association got up and walked out on Roger Ailes at their meeting.
Well, I'm sorry. They probably got out and walked out at some other people, you know, when they spoke, too. I mean, you know, you get who you want to cover, and you go on. I'm sorry. Does that mean they made them stay around and cover the guy when the guys came on from Reno, Nevada, or whatever?
Yeah. Well, Bozell's letter says, quote, "This open contempt shows personal intolerance and disdain for any point of view that doesn't reflect their liberal ideology." Interesting, however, that since he's all concerned about filth on television, there's more filth put out by Rupert Murdoch's Fox empire than ABC, CBS, and NBC put together.
Well, I mean, if you look at the, you know, at the time, you know, what's now becoming the CW, if you looked at the UPN and WB put together, he still was ahead on them. I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, say, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed, look at me, one of my favorite shows over the past few years was Married with Children. But,
yeah,
you know, it's one of those things. It's like, but you have to accept what this is covering. You know, it's lowbrow, hell yes.
Well, isn't it interesting that Bozell would concern himself with so-called intolerance when he and his faction are kind of, well, you know, that's the political correctness police. Yeah, they say that crap constantly, Luke.
Well, it's one of those things. It's always bad when anybody else does it except us. You know, I mean, that's what I mean. It's the hypocrite patrol. You know, it's sort of like, you know, as long as we do it, it's fine. But if you want to do it, no, you can't do this. This is totally against the rules for you to do it. How dare you? I mean, what makes you think you have the right to do it? Only we. On the right have the right to do this now.
Oh, I know. And, it's weirder and weirder. From my home turf, the land of my raising down there in North Alabama, big sting at the Joe Wheeler Wildlife Refuge, Luke.
Oh, gosh.
It turns out that 27 people got busted for alleged acts of public indecency and lewdness at the Wheeler National Wildlife Refuge.
Okay.
I'm guessing, they're trying to crack down on cruising, I guess.
Oh, okay.
But it turns out they also nabbed one Reverend Gradson L. Tanner.
Oh!
The minister of the Salem United Methodist Church.
He was there to minister to somebody, I'm sure.
He was ministering.
One-on-one.
This is the quote, Luke. I stepped to the edge of the woods and took a leak. Two men came out in camouflage. I tried to talk with them, but they weren't having mercy on anybody. They said I illegally exposed myself. I was totally dumbfounded. I didn't think I was in view of anyone. I didn't see nothing lewd about it.
Okay. This actually is something I read not too long ago. You know that one of the things is now that if you're caught mooning, do you know what that is now considered?
Felonious assault?
A sex crime.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Because they were talking about the fact that if you they were talking about this database that they're setting up, that if you have been arrested someplace, I don't remember exactly where they were talking about, and they said, essentially, if you were arrested for mooning, you were classified as a sex criminal.
Jeez. Well, another person that they took down in this thing in North Alabama, Luke, was none other than a gentleman by the name of Gary C. Huckabee.
Oh, God.
Now, he's the former president of the Alabama State Bar.
Ooh.
And
been on hard times, has he?
Hey, stop that. the little wheels never stop turning, do they, Luke?
you got to get those little jabs in when you can, you know.
But I mean, this is the U.S. Attorney's Office running the sting, using federal agent time and Alabama Department of Conservation time to go out and bust people. I mean, at this point, we can no longer say does a bear in the woods, because he'd get busted if he did. This is, you know, and this is the U.S. Attorney Alice C. Martin, appointed by George Bush, sitting there in Huntsville with the Marshall Space Flight Center, arguably a terrorist risk, and the best thing she's got to do is go looking for rednecks doing what rednecks do after rednecks sit on the end of the pier fishing all day and drinking beer.
And I'm sure they were probably ended up using the Hubble and everything to catch them, you know, watch them.
This is just so sad and embarrassing.
It's one of those things. It's like, look, gang, we understand there are crimes. Sometimes there are crimes being committed on lower levels, but it's like, guys, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, let's not push, you know, cut off the nose to spite the face. You know, it's one of those things where it's sort of like, you know, these things are going to happen, but, you know, I mean, this is what the police are for. Now, I'm sorry, I want my federal in dollars being spent to go after the big people. I mean, you know, something like this is happening and something like this is wrong, there's a game warden. There's, you know whatever the Alabama
But SWAT teams in camo with night vision goggles?
Are they going to go monitor the Boy Scouts when they have their next jamboree? I'm just curious.
You know,
how dare you all dig a hole in the ground so you all can go out there and see yourself?
Yeah, that's okay. There's a petting zoo in Alabama that is under greater threat to homeland security than the Empire State Building. So, you know,
well, you saw the thing with the. It,